was there for our tour of their school when we were in Houston.
Yeah.
Very impressive, very impressive. Mm-hmm. At least the main school.
What's the adult kid? I would say it's probably 80% adults.
Yeah.
20% kids. We teach the kids jujitsu, adults the MMA thing, you know, cardio kickboxing.
You have more women doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu than I expected. What's your male-female ratio in that?
Male-female, probably about 25%.
Yeah, so 75-25. I mean, a lot of schools end up almost 100% male. So what do you think accounts for you getting that high percentage of women doing
jiu-jitsu? Better-looking guys than
well, obviously, that would
it comes from the top down.
Yeah.
I would say just a good, I think a family culture, yeah. And you need a mom in there as well,
yeah.
So I think everybody's real warm.
Well, your wife is one of the teachers, right?
Yeah, she'll help out.
Yeah. Certainly. How many?
Guarantee you have female instructors, you'll have female students.
How many female instructors do you have for the Brazilian students?
At that one location, she'll help out, but really it's kind of taken off. And it's like all the guys are really welcoming and stuff
right.
Like that from any level.
Yeah.
So I think the ladies come in with their boxing mind,
mm-hmm.
and they get bored or
right.
they want to upgrade and it's like something that they want to do. That's kind of scary.
Who else is doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? What percentage of women do you have?
15-20%.
Okay, so still not bad. Who else?
Or total student base or pro jiu-jitsu program?
I'd say 10%.
Or should we say
10 to 15%? 10 to 15%.
Well, they're doing cardio and a bunch of other things.
Wait, does that include kids as well? Or are we just talking adult program?
No, adults.
Yeah, 10 to 15%.
Yeah. Okay.
But we just started pushing more females.
Yeah. You had a higher percentage than I expected.
I think you're right, though. You get them in, you get the women in on the cardio kickboxing, and it's not like they're going to do that for 3 or 4 years. They're going to get, you know, 6 months to a year, they're going to want to move on to the next thing. And if you've got this next program that challenges them, because they're already kind of martial arts minded, to
right.
them, and here's something else they can.
Well, and they have such a good culture there. So
I think that's the key thing.
Because
you guys weren't even marketing much for kids for a while, right? But you still got like 78 kids there, right? Last
it's
week.
About 100.
Yeah, now it's 100. Because it was like 70. I think it was 60 or 70 when we were there last.
Well, it was about 100, but that was all kids of.
But now it's a little lower price point.
Yeah.
Now we increase the price point. We're still.
That was mostly kids of men or women who are trained always.
Right, but I guess my point is the school, the design of the school is very welcoming. The upstairs thing was really nice and open. You had some
right.
really good stuff on the walls. It wasn't, didn't look like your
yeah.
basement.
Yeah.
Wasn't a gym.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got high?
Yep.
Okay,
what's
very good.
H-A-I.
H-A-I. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I showed him your website and showed him Jeff Peterson's and Travis's team took everything. And then the men, introduce yourself.
This is my wife, Ann, 50 years, 50 years next year, that's it.
Wow, you got married at 2?
Thank you. I'm young married.
I was
you know?
12.
Oh, you were 12.
And that's the truth.
I've been in martial arts about 50 years and 3 types of martial arts. I started out in judo, and next I got in aikido, and I moved fast. 5 years and I got a black belt in judo, 7 for aikido, and I got fast again. 5 years for taekwondo. So I got the broken body to prove it, though.
Don't
we all?
Yeah. And then we have one school, and I was a true martial artist. I took my honeymoon. I took her to 2 judo schools, but she got the concept of martial arts. She said, you know, you're supposed to give way, so the rest of the week we did what she wanted. So I don't know. It's a great deal. I don't know. It worked out.
our school focuses on taekwondo.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
We're so big for taekwondo.
What percentage?
We're about 60-40. 60-40. 60 kids.
6%.
Yeah.
And I tell people, any of us who started in the 60s, early 70s, you have to know there's some wiring deficit for anybody to have trained in martial arts in the 60s and still be doing it. Is that a fair assessment, Carol?
Yes.
So, if you started in the non-kinder, gentler, and then, of course, Master Smith and I were in the Texas, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah, he was Texas, real easy going.
Yeah.
Broken ribs or whatever, I don't know.
Bare knuckle, full contact.
Yeah, right. Sometimes we got to inform him, I guess, so.
I was talking to Alan Steen at June Reed's birthday party, and that was one of the first tournaments I competed in as a kid, was his big tournament. And it was this year, it was Pat Worley won the Grand Championship, but it was full contact. It was the first year with pads, so it was full contact with foam pads, foam feet, no headgears, on a concrete floor. Hip throws, supporting leg sweeps, all legal. And a lot of the knockouts ended up being you kick, I grab your leg, you know, I grab you, sweep you, punch you while you bounce your head off the concrete. And he said, yeah, we had 48 ambulance runs that day. Now, nowadays, I mean, the U.S. Open had...
Down from the year before.
What's that?
Down from the year before,
yeah. Well, the U.S. Open had, what, 4,000 competitors. I didn't see any ambulance runs. You know, nowadays, as a promoter, you know, one or two, and you'd be out of business. So,
first 3 years we were married, I got a dislocated shoulder and had it cut off. And then the second year, I had a cartilage out my knee. Third year, I had to have the shoulder reoperated. My wife she was ready for a divorce by then. Yeah. Started out the whole man got parts now.
She didn't know about the groin kick.
In the late 60s, early 70s, late 60s, he went to Judo Nationals in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I went down with him. And this one young man kept getting arm bars and breaking their arms. And the third one he did that night, the same Hawaiian gentleman, I said to my husband, I said, oh, I bet he feels bad. He said, are you kidding me? That was his deal. But I really thought he would feel bad.
No. Different mentality. Do we have anybody else we didn't introduce? Oh, well, you did a pretty good job of total illegibility. So all right, that's good. Hey, they got plenty of samples of mine, so they know that I would have been a much worse option there. Hey, Master Moody, is this working now?
It's solid red.
That means it's working?
We're good.
Okay, good. So, any questions from what we've covered so far? Some of this we've lived through kind of quickly. What I wanted to pick up on is the follow-up systems. And so over here, if you can see and read my writing, is, you know, we were saying in order of actually get something to happen, let's talk about this a little bit more. You're always better off face-to-face. And to give that some context, like Kim and Greg, this last weekend, what was it, 65 appointments?
Yes, sir.
So at the Ninja Turtles, last weekend they got 65 appointments from the Ninja Turtles. And my critique had been they had 140 leads, and I would have liked to have seen that be 110, 120 appointments, right? And in the old days, what we would do was a contest or lead box or something like that and get leads, and then the only follow-up would usually be just call them, right? But what we have found is that at an event like that, if you can get them to the point where they give you money for something, that's as solid as it gets. Something like a movie theater that's against the contract, actually. They don't want you taking money in the theater because they're afraid you won't buy popcorn or something, I guess. But the closer you can get is make an appointment on the spot, right? So anytime you're interacting with them, if you can make an appointment on the spot, you're better off than just capturing contact information and then trying to follow up later, right? The second thing is on this is that we talked, and Jan, you gave a great example of how immediacy is so important, right? Calling them next week is a whole big different thing than calling them on the way out of the movie theater, calling them on the way home from the daycare, calling them on the way home from the event, right? So the more closer you can get to when they interacted with you to begin with, the better off you're going to be in the higher conversion rate you're going to have. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes?
All these notes that look like chicken scratch, it'll really bring back a lot of your recollection. So next break, take your cell phone, just take a little shot of each one, and you get back and you're thinking about what you might have not made notes on.
Yeah, or you'll be totally befuddled, and it'll add to the level of confusion. Hopefully the first one. So now going through this list, the thing that we didn't touch on much so far is what level of frequency would you want to be picking up the phone and beating them to bed, calling them? How often would you want to be sending text messaging? How often would you want to be doing direct mail? How often would you be wanting to broadcast, voicemail, etc., right? And let's start with first premise. It's 1,000% harder to get their attention than you think it is. 1,000% harder to get them to respond than you expect. Always think in terms that way, because it'll remind you to do a bunch more stuff rather than less. Does that make sense? Okay. But when you start talking about calling them, one of the first questions we had up here is, how many times are you going to call them if you haven't gotten hold of them and haven't gotten a yes or no answer, right? Well, what's the answer to that? You're going to call them until you get hold of them and get a yes or no answer. I don't subscribe to the theory of pick up the phone, call them once, leave a message, they don't call you back, they're not interested. You know, my theory is keep calling until you get hold of them. And anybody who's ever worked for me will tell you, my theory is keep calling them until you get a yes. And, you know, what I find with kids is dad just got home from school, picks up the phone, doesn't know anything about it. You get a no from dad, that doesn't mean you got a no from mom, right? So when it comes to calling, you know, you want to have whoever's doing the outbound call start at the top of the list, work their way down, start at the top of the list again, work their way down. From an employee management standpoint, you've always got to look at the piece of paper and ask the right questions. Because you'll say, how's it going on the calls? Oh, I've called everybody. Well, that's not any valuable information for me. How's it going on the calls? Well, I've gone through them all and called them all once. Good. How many of you gotten hold of? 10%. Okay. How many of the ones you've gotten hold of have you gotten appointments for? Well, you know, 80% of the 10%, right? And, okay, so what time did you do the calls? Well, I did them all from 4 to 5. Okay, we've got some time now, start over. Well, I already called them all today. No, well, but yeah, it's 5, so let's start over, right? So you've got to always bring it down to that level. And the staff member who says, I called them all, well, you can accomplish that with a broadcast voicemail, right? What I want to do is they've called them, start at the top, gone through, until they get hold of them, okay? Big phone rooms, they have predictive dialers. What that means is they have, everybody's on a computer, and the computer is calling, and as soon as they get a live answer, it routes them to a human being, right? And it just keeps going through the list until they get a live answer, and then it puts a human being on the phone. So you've got to be thinking of the same way. And I talked about a little bit before, you know, call them all at 9 a.m., call them all at 11, call them all at noon, call them all at 2, call them all at 4, call them all at 7. And, you know, some people react like that going, wow, that's a lot of work. If an enrollment's worth $5,000, then it's worth a lot of work to get an appointment. It's worth a lot of work to get an appointment, right?
That's why they call it work?
Exactly, yeah.
That's right. Print out the list rather than work off of a computer. I find I'll get clipboard, and nothing's better than them penciling in L/M left message, N/A, and they left a time that they called. So when they go back to call the next time, they use a different time block. Because, well, these afternoon calls, these people answered. Well, now I'm going to try the morning block. I'll try the evening block. And we find by trying the different blocks of either morning, afternoon, or evening, you pretty much can get a hold of about 80% of the people, at least if you're persistent.
If you're persistent, yeah. And you know, I'm not suggesting that you call somebody 10 times a day, leave 10 different voicemails, increasingly urgent, right? You don't want to look neurotic or psychotic. Yeah, leave one message and then just keep dialing until you get hold of them. Now, then you have, and we're still on the subject of calling them. So let's say I just did Jan's deal and we had 140 people, 160 people. We called through them all, and let's say now we've been through the list. There's 10% of them that haven't answered the phone for 3 weeks, and all of the others we have a yes or no, right? So now we have everybody that we have a no, and we have everybody who didn't answer the phone. Now, when do you want to go back to them? See, now that's the thing. A lot of times, even if you've gone through that thoroughly, you just abandon the list, right? Well, if I say no in August, does that mean no in October? Does that mean no in January? Does that mean no in March, right? So what I will always do is put all this stuff together where at least we're going to cycle back, start at the top and go through all of them, outbound telemarketing, at what I know are going to be peak times, right? So if any leads I got over the summer, no matter what they told me already, short of we're moving to Iran, right? Regardless of what they told me, I'm going to go back through and call them all for a big back-to-school blitz, right? Whenever your schools go back in session, I'm going to start about 2 weeks before school goes back in session and hit it hard for about 4 weeks after and go back through them all again, right? But at the very least, I do back-to-school, New Year's, mid-spring, summer special, and I would find 4 or 5 times a year where every one of the leads, you're going back through and calling them outbound again. Does that make sense? Now, then the question is, you've got text messaging, direct mail, broadcast voicemail, email, Facebook, all this stuff, right? The example I've used a bunch of times, but it holds up pretty well, is quite a few months ago now, there was an article in Wall Street Journal that was talking about big national retailers that are good. Okay, so think Nordstrom, Neiman Marcus, Macy's. And the conversation was, how often to their customer list were they sending emails? Anybody have a guess?
Twice a day.
Yeah, it was about twice a day, right? So it was in a range of 370 to 680 times a year was how often they were emailing their customer list. Now, if you're on the Groupon list or Living Social list or one of those, how often do you get emails from? Typically, it's at least a couple times a day, right? So from a standpoint of how often should you be emailing somebody, see, that's a standard is a couple times a day, right? Now, most of us in practical terms aren't going to, you know, get our act together enough to have that much content. But let me give you a couple shortcuts. Obviously, shortcut number one is the resources. Put them in the NAPNA system, and that'll give them a weekly newsletter, right? Number two is we've got all kinds of content that's up in the member site that you can just cut and paste. That's all informational content, so you can just cut and paste. Number two is, think about it this way. If somebody sent you an email today, a month from now, are you going to remember exactly what that email said or what was in it?
No.
No. And if somebody sent me a postcard today, are you going to remember what the postcard looked like and said?
No.
So a shortcut is create a couple months worth of content, then just have it start over, then have it start over, and have it start over, right? And as Master Moody was saying, you just start by getting something, the NAPNA newsletter and some other stuff going out, and then you can keep adding to it. Does that make sense so far? Okay. And so, again, you have frequency telemarketing. I wouldn't be at all hesitant to just outline a program where every other month I went through all of the leads. Okay, I would be fine with doing it every month. I wouldn't have somebody who told me no on Tuesday and call them back on Thursday unless I was hoping to not get dad this time, get mom, which is fine, right? Again, keep in mind, you get grandma on the phone, you get the babysitter on the phone, you know. Parents just had a fight and they don't want to talk to anybody and they say no curtly. That doesn't mean they mean it, right? So always be slow in giving up on somebody. Zig Ziglar's line was, he knew a salesperson who was so good, they couldn't hear a no shouted in their ear, but they could hear a yes whispered across the stadium, right? So then when it comes to email, the ideal would be to get up to as much as 2 times a day. But clearly, once a week is inadequate. A couple times a week is kind of weak. Daily would be great. More than daily is even better. Okay? Now, in order to do that, it has to be varied. In other words, it can't be twice a day I send you a pitch for 2 free weeks of lessons. Right? It's got to be a lot of informational content, a lot of proof content, combined with invitations to any interesting events that you're hosting at the school, combined with periodic seasonal offers, combined with some other special for them to come in. Okay, does that make sense? And you want to weigh it heavily on interesting and entertaining content, right? So the more, and as social media evolves, that this is even more important. So as you're talking Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, the more it can be valuable content and entertaining content, the better off you are. It can't be just you're going out and posting an intro offer twice a day. Does that make sense? So again, it's educational material. And again, in the member site, there's as much of that as you could ever need, right? So just pull the lessons of the week and the different content, cut and paste, and you can use that for as much of it as you want. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. It also should be invitations to any events that you do at the school. It should be newsletter type of stuff. In other words, you have a graduation and you congratulate the new black belts, you congratulate the new brown belts, you have an inter-school tournament and it's congratulations and highlights. Feature story. The more you're featuring people and accomplishments, the better off you are, right? And then periodic offers. And by periodic, I don't mean if you sent 12 emails this week that is once a month. I mean, you seed into it special introductory offers, but you just can't have it be that every email that comes from you is a direct pitch, because then they'll just stop looking at it, right? You want it to be entertaining, interesting, and valuable.
What do you say in the subject column is going to have to determine whether they open it or not? A lot of people just change that. It's just kind of like free offer or something.
Then they're never going to look at it.
Subject, then a lot of people, especially if you make something that is attractive to open.
Well, that's exactly right, and that goes back to our conversation about designing an ad. Remember, we said an ad in a cluttered environment, the headline is the ad for the ad, and the headline has to get into the conversation going on in their mind and offer to solve a problem that they feel like they have. Well, the headline in an email is the subject line. Right? And the subject line has to sell them opening it. And the biggest problem with, the two problems with email is deliverability and open rates, right? So if you don't have a good headline as the subject line, you'll never get them to open it to begin with. And it's got to be varied. It's got to, it's got to be interesting. It's got to appear educational. And it's got to anchor them into something they want to see. Does that make sense? So then you have text messaging, and to get all this stuff to work best together, I like to use broadcast voicemail as a follow-up to a direct mail piece. And Peter, I think you just said that a minute ago, where you'll time an email that goes out and then a text message that reinforces the email. And see, email is good for giving them a link for or embedding in the email a ton of content. Email is bad for actually getting them to read the damn thing, right? So, you guys, I've been defaulting now to send you a text to tell you to read the email I just sent, right? And I freely tell everybody, you know, email me all the stuff I need to see before you get on the phone, but text me and tell me this, that I need to go look and find your email, right? Because I may well, you know, like my email, any of you get my autoresponder? Jay's the only one who was stupid enough to ignore it, I think. But the autoresponder said what, Jay?
Which one?
The vacation one. I'm gone. I'm not going to see this. If you want me to read it, send it to me after I get back. And if there's anything important, if it's this, call Bob. If it's this, call Jeff. And otherwise, I'm out of here, right? And
of course, I was with him. So.
Yeah. For the second half. That's exactly right. But I did go through and read it before we did the teleconference.
Yes,
and
I said it because I knew you were going to read it.
Right. I actually did a good job. I didn't read my email at all while I was at Disney. And then who was on the teleconference? The one we did last Wednesday?
The one from Sturgis with the motorcycles.
With the motorcycles in the background? Yeah. How obnoxious were the 500 Harleys in the background?
It's awesome. Wasn't too bad.
We were right at the foot of Rushmore.
Yeah, we were like 5 minutes from Mount Rushmore at Keystone. And the funny thing about that, this is the behind the scenes story. So there's like five of us, and I keep poking him and going like this because, you know, we're just out riding in the rain. And I'm, one, concerned there's going to be a cell signal. And two, make sure that, you know, we're going to be someplace where I can, like, stop and, you know, talk on the phone. And so finally, about 10 minutes till the conference, we stop in Keystone because we were going to try to get to Sturgis and do it, but that didn't happen. And so I get off the bike, and I had Bob queuing up the thing to record it all and stuff. And then it ends up being where I walk into this little place, and it's like a gift shop, and then they called it the Mount Rushmore Museum. But it looked like a hotel lobby. And so I walk in, I see a TV, so if there's a TV, there's got to be an electric outlet, right? So I walk up to the TV, plug my cell phone, plug the connection, plug the ear set in, plug my laptop in, make myself at home, pull out the iPad. And then they had a little desk over there, so I pulled the desk chair over and put it where the thing. So I've got my little office here. And it's this, you know, again, it's supposed to be the Mount Rushmore Museum, but there's no human beings in it. Other than way down there, there's like a check-in desk with one woman at the thing, and there's a gift shop back there with nobody in it except, now this is 600,000 motorcycle riders in and around the area, and there's only the proprietor in each of these establishments. That tells you something. So I sit and make myself at home, and then I three-way him in, three-way Bob in, and Bob can't figure out the recording, right? So now we've got, you're in there, and the whole line is blocked, so nobody can ask questions or anything, so the only one who's live is me. And then, I don't know if it was you or Bob, somebody who I've got three-wayed in keeps muting themselves, right? But they keep going *6, but when *6 tells the conference line to mute you, so since it's all three-way through my phone, it was either you or Bob kept hitting *6, and then they kept muting me, so I kept, like, I'd be in the middle of a sentence and it would mute, right? And then I figured out, so it's *6, and I'd be up.
I just used the mute on my phone, not
so it was Bob. Bob was doing, yeah. So Bob kept muting himself, not realizing that he was muting me, right? And so then we get about 40 minutes into the call, and the gal who's way over there at the desk comes up and says, "I think that's better something you should do in your hotel room." Nobody there. Am I disturbing somebody by talking on the phone? Yes. And we're going to close in at 1. Well, I still have 20 minutes, so I get kicked out, right? So I get kicked out. I'm not making this up.
That's why the motorcycle noise came.
So I get kicked out. So I walk out front. Now, it's now pouring rain, and there's 500 motorcycles passing on the road in front of us as I'm on the teleconference, right? So I'm trying to walk in the pouring rain around the building while I'm reading Jay's stupid question about fucking Brandon Beliso or whatever the hell it was. His moron.
Oh, yeah.
What was it about? What was Brandon's deal?
He does this thing where he says, "We don't have an office, we don't have contracts, we don't have upgrades.
We don't know how to sell, we don't want to know how to sell, you shouldn't have to
do anything." If you see an office at a martial arts academy or like a like a sit-down sales spot. He's like, something's wrong. Turn around, walk out. If you see an office between you and the mat, something's wrong.
Everybody write this down. This is important. this is very important.
Hey, don't put my name in there.
This is important. In the age of the internet, there is a wide variety of very expensive free advice.
Yes, sir.
Most of it sucks.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's very expensive. It's going to cost you a lot of money to listen to stupid crap.
Can you repeat that again?
There's a wide variety of free information that will be very expensive to your career. That's stated differently, but the Steve Jobs even addressed this in one of the interviews before he passed. He was talking about it in the context of the Wall Street Journal and New York Times. And somebody was asking him, is it going to become just a nation of bloggers? Are all the major news outlets going to go away? He said, I certainly hope not, because we have a place for well-researched, well-documented, quality information, not just, you know, not just random off-the-street opinions. And in the age of the internet, I mean, anybody and everybody, and the martial arts has been, and of course, we created more than a few of them, but the martial arts industry has been populated with everybody who thinks they're an expert. And now that you have YouTube and everything, they're all free to, you know, to share their opinion widely in a free environment. But all of that was very bad, you know, very bad advice. Other than, you know, he said he charges $229 a month or something. So, you know, that's fine. But he's in L.A.
His high price point.
That's his highest?
He said that's his only price point. He says, well, we have a very high price point at $229. That's when you said, I consider that kind of the lowest you can do.
Maybe as an entry level, that's fine. I mean, if I remember correctly, because I worked with him for a while, if I remember correctly. Not for very long. His sister wouldn't let him spend money or something, if I'm thinking of the same person. But if I remember, he's someplace like, there's a bunch of rich suburbs in L.A., down south,
San Diego or something?
No, Orange County. He was somewhere in Orange County. So maybe where I was thinking about a minute ago, Mission Viejo in there, that area or something. But he was some expensive suburb in L.A., not that there's any that aren't particularly expensive. But, you know, if you're in Manhattan or if you're in any decent area in L.A. and you're charging less than $300 a month, you know, certainly Manhattan, it's well, L.A., same deal. But anyway, but very bad advice. But so anyway, so we're doing the teleconference, and now I have Bob star-sixing himself to mute out, and every time he did that, he was muting me. Now I'm in the pouring rain with the Harleys zipping by, trying to...
Off, and then I think I had to cover there for a while.
Exactly. So it was rather entertaining.
And I wasn't even there. I was 3 blocks down the road.
Yeah, you were 3 blocks down the road, and Bob was in Tampa. And Bob was just trying to make sure the recording was done right, but he didn't realize he kept muting me when he was muting himself. And then he had put it on conference mode rather than Q&A mode. So he had everybody where they couldn't do Q&A. I was telling them to do star six, and you and everybody else couldn't get in. So, but anyway, back to frequency. Text message, broadcast voicemail, email are all more effective if they reference and follow a direct mail piece. Okay? Email is more effective if you text them or voicemail them and told them you sent it. With broadcast voicemail, a lot of times I'll send them a broadcast voicemail and say, look for the package in the mail. And then a couple days after they should have received it, or a day after they should have received it, send them a voicemail saying, if you got that package, then, right? Is that all making sense? Hey, tie it all together to the greatest extent possible. Of all of this stuff, the only place I would worry too much about frequency is in text messaging. So I wouldn't get into the mode of texting them twice a day like I was emailing them twice a day. And it is someplace where there's some pretty harsh regulations. I'm not as worried about that as long as you have an opt-out link, to tell you the truth. I will give you a predisposition. When it comes to marketing, I tend to be it's better to ask forgiveness than permission, right? There's a U.S. Supreme Court case with my name on it, by the way. We won, but it was on broadcast facts, And what it was is there were aggregators who would buy up broadcast faxes from people for like $20 and they go sue you. We had one that sued us for $90,000, another one sued us for $50,000, another one sued us for, I forget what it was. But the luckily my insurance company covered it, but they fought it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court sided with us, which was, although the FTC law about there being individual penalties was valid, the ability of somebody to aggregate it was not transferable. So these lawyers who were trying to buy up faxes for $10, $20 and then go sue you for $1,500, it put them all out of business. So so just to know, I mean, I tend to be a little bit more aggressive. And the place where I'm sensitive are places where, to use Jay Abraham's terminology, it's a host-parasite relationship, meaning you're in an organization where they're providing you access to their customers or students, and now you don't want to piss the host off, right? So specifically an elementary school. So when it comes to an elementary school, I'm not terribly sensitive about direct mail, not terribly sensitive about broadcast voicemail. I'm a little sensitive about outbound telemarketing and a little sensitive about text messaging, because you can piss them off pretty quickly, and then all they have to do is go tell the principal, and now you're out of the school altogether, right? In that context, what we started doing is doing permission slips that said, everybody who participates has 1-2 free weeks. Would you like us to call and schedule an appointment, yes or no? And if they said yes, we'd call them. If they said no, we'd do everything else, probably short of text messaging at this point. Does that make sense? That's sensitive. But again, go through this. If you were, now let's not say that they're hot leads you just got this weekend, but now they said no on the phone call, and it's a month or two later. Let's talk about frequency for keeping them warm, right? Is with direct mail, and again, let me give you an ideal. The first consideration is this. How many of you have like cardio kickboxing programs? Okay. Let me take Simon. Simon, in your case, what are you charging for? How much? Okay, not bad. What's the attrition rate like in it?
It's pretty high.
Okay. Would you say 20% a month, 10% a month, 30% a month? Okay. Well, that's not bad for that kind of program. So on average, they're going to pay, what, $200 to start, $149, probably keep an average of 7-8 months, right? So you've got an average value, what's that quick, $1,200? Okay. So now you've got a $1,200 average student value, right? So it's very important to know that number. So if you had, let's say, a cardio kickboxing program, you have 25% attrition a month at $99. I've seen a lot of people do it this way, right? So now they're turning them over every 4 months. They're charging $99 down, $99 a month. Well, their value is $400, right? Yours is $1,200. You could probably get it up to $2,000. But at $1,200, you wouldn't be hurt if you spend $300 or $400 to get a new enrollment, right? If at the margin you spent $600, you could still make money doing that, although that's really at the high end, right? So if you don't know that number, you don't know what you can spend, right? So the reason I'm going there is let's outline a 12-month follow-up system, right? So let's say in the next 12 months, and I'll do the ideal aggressive one. Again, if you don't get around to developing all this stuff immediately, you don't need to. You just keep, you know, enhancing. But let's say that I'm going to do outbound telemarketing to them 6 times a year, plus invite them to whatever exciting event we have going. Okay? Then I'm going to text them anytime I invite them to a live event. And I'm going to tie text into the outbound telemarketing so that I'm going to call them, and if I don't get hold of them, they're going to get a text each time I pick up the phone and call them. Okay. And then what I'm going to do is on direct mail, I'm going to make sure that every month they get a school newsletter, which again could be the Kickin' newsletter, you know, just, and I'm not talking about by email, I'm talking about printed and mailed to them, right? And anytime there's anything cool about the school, you know, a bunch of people went off to the world championships and placed, anytime you have a new valedictorian student, anytime you have a new fitness competitor winner, or anything like that. It's in the newsletter, and birthday party stuff like that, right? So I would, every month they get the newsletter, every month they get an invitation to some special event, and they get a text inviting them, they get a call inviting them, right? So again, depending upon what that is, you have Ninja Night, you have a board breaking day, you have a UFC night at the school, whatever it might be. But anytime you have something that, you know, you don't have to be a brown belt or black belt to be at, you send them an invitation, right? Then at least once a month, you send them at least something like a color postcard with some kind of time-limited special offer. And then I'd like to see it be once a month. You send them something that's intended to be educational without being a pitch. Okay? So essentially what I just outlined is basically every week they're getting something from you in the mail. Okay? Then with email, I try to get it where they're getting as much as twice a day they're getting something from the school. They're getting something twice a day from the school, they're going to get a whole bunch of invites to whatever special event you did, possibly with a link that takes them to a website, RSVP, or what are those websites that can... Amanda, what is it you've been using? That Evite or whatever?
Evite.
So a link back to Evite, RSVP, or a link to the website to tell them a little bit about what's going on, something like that. So I invite them to all the events. Now, on a weekly basis, you just subscribe and we'll send them the Kickin' newsletter. And then anytime you have something special that is human interest, you know, some of ours were, we had a young lady who had cancer and got her black belt. We had a female who had a heart condition and got her black belt. We had a 78-year-old man that got his black belt. So those kind of human interest type of things, send them the publicity that comes in on it, send them an article about it, send them information about that. So any kind of interesting type of stuff, right? You also want to, you know, a couple times a week, send them an offer. Notice that's out of 12 times. So, you know, hear them 12 times, at least a couple times a week, send them with some, what feels like time-limited special offer. And then send them a lot of educational material. A lot of the educational material is disguised proof of value of the program, right? The thing that I like the most is send them a link to a powerful testimonial, right? You can send a link to a powerful testimonial by email. You can send a link to a powerful testimonial by text, right? You can send them a broadcast voicemail and drive them to, you know, like in our instance, you might do milehighkarate.com/video1. And you could drive them to a little link that shows them a testimonial video. We got a ton of that stuff up for Mile High Karate. Everybody knows about tiny URL, right? There's two or three URL shortening sites. One I use a fair amount is tiny URL. And so what happens is you can take like a YouTube URL that's like that long, put it in tiny URL, and then you can ask for like tiny URL /, and then say, you know, Elite MMA or Elite or MMA or something like that. And if that hasn't been used already, you can get something that makes sense. And if whatever you're guessing at isn't available, either way, it's going to give you a real short URL. So the real short URL is especially useful for text messaging people a URL that then takes them back to a YouTube video or wherever you wanted to take them. or it could take them back to your web page as a landing page to show them videos and so forth, right? Again, keep in mind with text messaging, everybody in here who has a smartphone, raise your hand. Okay? Put it down. Who does not? Okay? See, I mean, the general public isn't quite at that level yet, but it's getting there fast. Okay? So almost everybody you're going to be sending a text message to are going to be reading it on an iPhone, an Android, or maybe a Windows smartphone. Right? So, is this all making sense so far? Okay. So, a big part of the educational material is constantly be sending them testimonials.
Pastor Oliver?
Yes, sir.
So, just to make sure everybody's clear, the reason, do you guys understand why you need that tiny URL? Some of you do. Okay, most of you do. Okay. Because some of those links are really long, and it's very easy to post YouTube videos. But you can do it from your phone.
Yeah,
some testimonials.
Yeah, if it's... See, if I'm leaving a link to go back online on a voicemail, I want to have it something that's easy for them to understand and remember. So I'd much rather it be like elitemma.com/video1, something like that, right? If I'm texting it to them, a text message on the broadcast text messages are kind of like a Twitter feed, right? I think it's 140 or 100 characters or something like that. And you can max that out real quick without getting much in it. So then you want to do the reduced URL. In fact, Callloop, do they do that automatically now?
They actually have a service where you get a small URL and you can actually track it, see the metrics on just clicking on it.
Yeah. So with Callloop, you can just use their whatever they're doing, and then it enhances the tracking. That's relatively new. I'm still in the habit of go to tiny URL and plug it in there, but that's an extra step. Did everybody follow what we were talking about? So that resource I gave you of Callloop, they will, within their site, show you how to do that. And then it gives you a link to track how many people actually clicked on it and got there. So far, so good? Okay. Has everybody in here uploaded a video to YouTube at some time or another? See, that's extremely easy, right? You know, for any of your old farts, just get a teenager and, you know, I'll show you how to do it. And by the way, you know, Master Smith and I come from the era where a lot of this was really expensive and complicated, right? I mean, we have some videos we spent like $250,000 by the time it was all said and done doing it. But the average, you know, Galaxy or whatever damn piece of crap Android you have, or iPhone, I did that intentionally.
Yeah. Yes.
But whichever phone you have can, in almost all cases, do video that's high enough quality, assuming you have good lighting. With video, it's all about lighting when you go to a cheaper camera. So as long as you have good lighting, it can do video that's high enough quality that it looks professional for most of the stuff that we're talking about, right? So you can just pull out your iPhone and do a little video of a testimonial, and then from your iPhone, you can upload it directly to YouTube. And same thing with an Android phone. In fact, an Android, that's probably easier because Google owns YouTube. And then it's done. Now you have a link where you can text them a testimonial, you can send them. And again, you can do this for anything that you do that's interesting and exciting in the school. Goes back to the thing we were talking about with Joe earlier. The more you're sending them interesting stuff that's intriguing and educational and informational, the better off you are. And the more it can be a bigger and bigger and bigger stack of proof, the better off you are, right? So you want to be, I mean, a counterpoint to that is I saw this set of videos, what is it called? The Perfect Round Kick Around the World or something like that. See, that's not the type of thing you want to do. Because what you want is you want testimonial, you want family looking, again, depending upon your market, but classroom shots that fit what they're looking for. You want all kinds of benefit type of content. And then you want community service type of things that tie to their interest, right? So you've got to, you know, if I just sent you 10 lessons on how to get out of a chokehold or something like that, well, maybe for a Croft school, that's fine. For a kids program, that's irrelevant, right? the mom isn't interested in that. She's interested in hearing the PTO president talking about the karate program is the best thing she ever did for her 7-year-old with ADD. And so you want to make sure you pick your audience really well and send them things that are appropriate to them. Is that making sense? So if, when it comes to frequency, see, I'd love to see all of your leads get 3 to 4 pieces of mail a month. Some of that could be very inexpensive. Some of it might be more sophisticated. Now, I'd like to see your text message frequency mostly be either to follow a piece of direct mail or to follow up of you left them a message and you follow up with a text. Does that make sense? And you can drip on them with information, but at a certain point, that's the place where people are going to be most sensitive is interrupt them at dinner on the phone and send them, you know, 12 texts a day, then they're going to get annoyed, right? And so let's see, well, what haven't we hit here?
So
we haven't really talked about Facebook and stuff.
So 12 texts a day is what you would do?
I don't think I'd do that level of frequency with texting. So if I had a hot lead, so I met them at the theater this week, I'd be fine with, you know, texting them every day until I get hold of them, right? But now I've got somebody who said no, and they're now on my, they're still warm, but they're in my lead list. They came in for an intro, didn't enroll, I called them on the phone, they didn't make an appointment, whatever it is. I don't have a good data or rule of thumb for this, but my instinctually, I would say 2 or 3 times a month behind other stuff you did, right? So send them a piece of direct mail and send them a text, follow up the day they should have received it, or you have an event going up and you send it. I think it's the place. See, when email was new, you got a lot of blowback for sending it too much. And now that email is dying, you don't get much blowback on that, but you just can't get them to frickin' read it, so you have to, you know, do a lot of it, right? And with the broadcast text services, they all have opt-outs. So, you know, they can still opt themselves out, but it is the place where you're more likely to get some blowback, right? Especially if it's any kind of, you know, Billy's birthday party, or you're at an elementary school, or it was somebody's customer list. You know, they're more likely to get complaints if you hit that too often, right? So again, 3 or 4 times a month, once a week, twice a day, you know, maybe 6 times a year plus invites to events.
But that's going to be 18 times. You're going to invite them.
Right. So, and then you have things like Facebook and stuff. See, the only people I've talked to that are even claiming to get results like on Twitter, guess how many times they're tweeting a day?
Probably 5.
2 or 3.
What?
2 or 3.
100.
100 tweets a day.
Seeing that kind of result, yeah. 100 a day. What?
Who has time for all of that?
Well,
somebody's sitting down on that.
Is anybody in here getting any significant results from Facebook right now? Anybody? Simon, you're getting some? Tell us about what you're getting to work. So you're now you're now Facebook pay-per-click ads. Okay. From your lead list or from basically doing compiled with their deal? Right. I'm convinced that we're going to start getting really good results with Facebook. How many enrollments a month would you say you're getting from Facebook?
Say at least 2 or 3.
Oh, okay. So it's not a flood, but you are getting a trickle. And with that, you're measuring it pretty well because you can track clicks, you can track traffic. What kind of offer are you using?
Most of the
Okay, okay. And you're writing it as like a little in-stream banner ad. And then who are you trying to target?
Basically parents over the age of 25 to, is it like 50?
So you're targeting for the kids program. Okay, okay. So a minimum age of the parent, right? And then a geography, of course. And then what else? Yeah. The thing, if you don't know it, is Facebook, you know, a lot of you heard me say a year ago, you know, it's worthless. And my attitude about it has changed dramatically all spring. And I don't think any of us have really cracked the code yet, but there's light on the horizon. And what's interesting about Facebook versus Google right now, see, Google really is still like the yellow pages, right? So most of the time in Google, you're waiting for somebody to go look for what we are and then trying to get in front of them, although you can game that system as well. We'll talk about that later. But with Facebook, it's more like direct mail now. So they've bought a whole bunch of different data companies and list companies and targeting companies, and they're integrating all this stuff into their back end so that you can, in a very narrow way. So if you wanted to target every pediatrician that lives within a 10-mile radius of you that had kids, you could go target every pediatrician in a 10-mile radius from you that had kids. And if you think of the implications of that, you can now get closer and closer and closer to what we're calling a response list rather than a compiled list, and you can get very narrow casted. Yes, sir?
One of my students' parents is a marketing, runs her own marketing company. She's really big into Facebook.
Right.
And she said you can even target those that like the elementary school, that have liked the elementary school page or like the gymnastics school page on the street.
Yeah, see, it's their ability to target is getting extremely robust. And the other dynamic was when they went from just having the ads over there to having the ads in the actual feed, right? And Twitter's doing the same thing now. Okay, so we'll see if Twitter becomes productive as the way beyond past when Facebook's becoming productive. But there are, and this is a little bit of an aside, but it's on the list there. There are four or five ways to use Facebook, right? One of them, think of it as an enhancement to your normal referral programs. So now, as an enhancement to your normal referral programs, I take a picture of Billy with the school logo in the background and a picture with the instructor, and he just got his white belt or he just got his gold belt or whatever it is. And I go in and I post him on the school page and go in and tag him. And now it's showing up on his page and encourage him to share it with all of his friends. And what that is now is it's an indirect communicating about how much he's liking the school and one thing or another. So it's a referral mechanism. And a year ago, the only time I was ever seeing anybody have any useful, anything productive with Facebook was from that type of thing. Welcoming each new student, taking a picture, tagging them, passing it around, really getting that kind of thing to go. And what businesses have been focused on is having their Facebook page, getting people to like their Facebook page, posting that so it shows up in their feed. And that's all kind of hinky because Facebook monitors how often it'll go out, and then you can have to promote to get people who like your own page to go out. There's a lot of funkiness with that. But what I'm most excited with Facebook is what Simon and you were talking about, which is you can do two types of things. You can really narrowly target, again, everyone who liked a page of something that's comparable. So it's the elementary school down the street that's useful, or it's, you know, for the adult market. There's all kinds of different organizations and stuff in the area. And they have such robust data on their members, and they've tied it all in with all these other huge databases and huge database companies that you can really narrowly target, right? And now the question is getting where we've got the ad format and the response mechanism so we can start getting really exciting results, right? Now, in your case, Simon, you're getting two or three enrollments a month. What are you spending? Yeah, $300 a month. So if it's costing him $100 a piece to get the enrollments, that's rounding error. Now, the biggest expense right now is his learning curve, fussing around with it, right? But once you've gone through that learning curve, it's easy to maintain that. And again, with all of us, our combined knowledge as an organization, what you see is not many hands went up at all, and Simon's probably the best result so far. So is it worth saying everybody go out and get on the bandwagon? Eh, not yet. But my guess is over the next 60, 90, at least by 2015, it's going to be a very fruitful source. And it's going to be a more fruitful source than Google, in my opinion.
Well, how are you tracking your Facebook leads versus your other leads on the internet? When they come in and they say they saw you on Facebook?
No, no.
It's a huge thing.
Well, yeah, but if you, that's what I was asking. Are you tracking automatically or only when you talk to them? So you actually could be getting more leads from Facebook.
Well, you're tracking how many clicks you get to the ad, traffic to the site.
You can't track conversions from the site. You're pushing them to the site.
Okay. So we got to get a separate page that's just for them, so you can track it start to finish on what's coming from it.
Right. So it'll look the same maybe as your web page. Yeah. You go to the landing. That's why I was going to point out. You're probably getting people, and that's something for internet for everybody.
We'll go through that. But you need a separate landing page. And then you need a separate landing page with Google Analytics tied to it so we can track it through the system.
Because everybody comes in, how do you hear about us from the internet?
For that could be 100. How many people, what we just said, went over your head? Okay. Well, we're going to go much more in depth on that when you talk about internet. What we are going to do with internet, by the way, from long experience on doing this, is anything that we do that would be technical to the point that you need to be touching a screen to do it, we'll do as follow-up and webinar rather than trying to do it in a room like this, right? All I've ever found trying to do the technical in a room like this is two-thirds of the eyes gloss over and a third of the people knew how to do it already, okay? But we will do follow-up webinars to do all of that kind of technical stuff. And a lot of it we already have on the website. This Facebook stuff, we spent a fair amount of time this time last year talking about what was coming in the pipe. I think we did a couple of webinars on it that's up on the website. But we'll spend some more time on it. But it is something to keep your pulse on, because I'm convinced that they've now cracked the code and it's going to be pretty productive. Now, their only problem is it's like email. Facebook's always already on the slow death spiral because the median age of Facebook keeps moving up. And, like, you know, my 13-year-old does Instagram and whatever. She won't go on Facebook. So that's going to be their next problem, is as soon as they crack the code, it's going to be nothing but geriatrics on Facebook. No, I'm dead serious about that. I mean, if you look at the high school college crowd, you know, that's where their parents are, right? And a lot of the studies have shown, you know, the high school kids was really cool until mom and dad tried to friend them on Facebook. The other thing that you can do on Facebook is you can upload your own list. So, and that's why that was in there. You can upload your list to have pay-per-click ads show up to your existing lead list. Right? Did everybody know that? So you can go in to buy the pay-per-click ads, but you can give it your file of all of your prospects, as long as they can match the email addresses, which isn't perfect, or email address, either one, right? So if they can match the phone number or the email address, then they start having your ads show up in their feed, okay? And I would recommend doing that as just one other addition to all of this follow-up to keep them warm, okay? No. No. Let me think about that for a second. Saying no. With Google and with Facebook, you can do what's called retargeting. Okay? And that's mostly built from a cookie in your web browser on your site rather than handing them off a lead. Does everybody know what retargeting is? Does anybody know what retargeting is? Okay. Let me give you an example. If you're, let's say you're on your computer And like I'm a raging thunder lizard evangelist for Amazon as well as Apple, right? So I was recently on Amazon. Does everybody know what an Ames lounger is? They have there's Herman Miller in the 60s made this lounge chair that's very cool, and it's you know curved plywood
what
one thing
what
or
color
another.
Did you get?
I haven't bought it yet.
Okay.
But they keep tiddling.
Yeah, they talk to you about it all the time now.
But three examples. I went and looked at new high-end video cameras because we have all these high-end production quality video cameras that use tapes and everything's 100% digital. And the other one was this Ames lounger, right? Well, the Herman Miller one is $4,000 or $5,000. But there's an unlimited number of knockoffs that are $700 to $1,000, right? So I'm going to go in and you know figure out you know which of the quality knockoffs because I don't want to you know dump $5,000 on a chair. So I go to Amazon. I'm looking at the Ames loungers. Now, everywhere I looked when I was looking at my computer, different versions of the Ames lounger ads starts showing up, right? And what Amazon does is they're very aggressive at retargeting on Facebook and very aggressive at retargeting on Google. So if you go on your laptop and you're logged into Facebook, you can't log in, but you got Google open, and then you log into Amazon and go search for something, it'll start showing up everywhere you look, right? So I've been followed around just recently with like $5,000-$6,000 production video cameras and the $1,000 more or less chairs. That's what retargeting is. It's just a little cookie in their site that then passes it off to a host of other sites, and then it'll feel like everywhere you look, if depending upon how they do it, and Amazon's aggressive. So it's like all of a sudden, everywhere you look on, every time you look at Facebook, you'll see, in this case, video cameras. And then you start searching on Google, and all of a sudden you see video cameras all over, right? But that's what's called retargeting. Yes, sir?
Yeah, when we were down in Houston, I went to the Elite Martial Arts website.
Right.
And guess what's showing up everywhere?
Everywhere you look, yeah. And Infusionsoft does this too. So if you go to Infusionsoft site, and they've got their cookie kind of weird because, you know, I mean, we're subscribers, so we end up on their site every day. So almost anywhere I look on the web, I'll find Infusionsoft ads all over the place. So
I don't think the retargeting ads usually are good at taking you off when you buy it. Because I bought something recently, a really cool electronic cup. I sent that to you.
Yeah.
See that amazing thing. I bought it, so I'm tired of seeing it.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. I don't think they're very good at cycling you off once you buy it.
No.
You have to go through and clear your cookies and your cachet.
So
And I don't do that because I like to see what they're doing, right? So I'm just...
United's doing it, too, because I look for flights, and then I go somewhere else, and boom. Flight
oh, yeah,
here,
yeah, yeah.
Flight there.
Yeah. Well, Expedia, you know, when I was looking at the Disney trips on Expedia, they start showing up all over the place as well. But what the retargeting does, and you can be pretty sophisticated in retargeting. What a lot of the sophisticated marketers do is they put the cookie on the shopping cart page, and what they do is they retarget everybody who put it in the shopping cart but didn't buy, right? So then they'll be tracking you around with that. Now, I want you to think about it from two standpoints. What's the principle here? I went to Amazon, looked at it, didn't buy, put it in the shopping cart, didn't pay. That's the same as the intro came in and they didn't enroll. What do sophisticated marketers know? And I mean, Amazon's pretty damn sophisticated, right? What do sophisticated marketers know? You're a hot prospect, right? You're a hot prospect. How often do they want to keep marketing to you that same product? As much as possible, right? And I'm surprised, frankly, because with Amazon, and I don't know at what point you have to be a member, logged in, or whatever, because I'm a Prime member. But with Amazon, like the lounge chairs, I started getting emails with all the different options from Amazon, recommendations for you, and started seeing them all over Facebook and Google, right? So I know at least they've got it integrated with their email system, and they've got the retargeting. I'm surprised I haven't been getting box stuffers from Amazon, because that's what I do, and I haven't gotten any freestanding direct mail pieces. And probably what they know is They can do all the stuff that's cheap, but they would have to be more sophisticated and have a price point, right? So if it's, I'm looking at the $5,000 video camera, it would be worth their while to direct mail me and stuff. If I'm looking at, you know, some gizmo for 22 cents, it wouldn't make any sense.
There's a new technology that's being developed that drops the cookie into your computer in a way where you're not able to delete it.
Right.
It was actually developed out of China to get over the big firewall.
Yeah.
There's two main websites in the U.S. that are currently using it.
Right.
One's Google, the other one is the White House is using it on their website as well.
Yeah.
But theirs is a little bit different because they'll also be able to see everything that you do punch and click on your computer until you're able to figure out a way to get that off, and nobody's figured that out yet.
Amazon is waiting to send a drone to your house.
Yep.
The question about Amazon is whether they're ever going to make any money. I mean, that's the problem. They keep reinvesting in all this new stuff.
But one thing that's important about that concept, one of the principles we talked about before is direct response versus branding.
Yeah.
Amazon could know that you went to their website to try to buy something, and they could put the Facebook ad up, go to Amazon to buy some cool stuff. They don't do that. They try to get you to do something you're going to respond with right away. It's the same concept. So, you know, so another argument not to put your school's logo up and, you know, try to get your name out. And they're not, they could notice that you're going on Amazon trying to get their name out, but they're not doing that. They want you to buy.
Yeah. So. But the important thing first is the concept, because the nice thing about the internet is the fact that you can do cookies and all this stuff and tracking, and you can get pretty sophisticated with this stuff. So therefore, again, they can keep following you around to show you what you're already in heat to buy, right? And sometimes it falls apart because you already bought it and they're still showing it. Now, they're typically buying it as not per impression but as clicks, although a fair amount of the retargeting is impression. So they're paying per 1,000 impressions rather than on clicks on that. Does everybody follow that? No? Okay. You're buying, in some instances, you're buying ads online like you would buy a newspaper ad. You're paying them a price per 1,000 impressions like you'd go buy a newspaper ad and they say it's 500,000 distribution, so you're going to pay X for this, which translates to cost per 1,000, right? So when you're buying any kind of media, you always translate it to what's the cost per effective 1,000. Meaning effective, the geography you serve in this case, and multiply whatever there. It's why buying cable TV is cheaper than buying ABC, right? So I can buy a spot for $30 that might cost $7,000 on ABC, but the $30 may actually be more expensive on a cost per 1,000 basis, right? So, and usually it is, by the way. Usually in that comparison, it's much more expensive. But online, you can do both. You can buy, and Google was GoTo, but you know, Google has been the 800-pound gorilla for quite a while, and you pay for performance. Their iteration of performance is you show up on their site, right? And there's really several different types of compensation. There's pay for performance, pay for action taken, pay per sale, or pay for exposure. And mostly online, pay for exposure is not the way to go. Pay per click is more likely to be what you can do almost all this stuff with, but there are instances where you can pay per opt-in or you can pay per sale. Affiliate programs are a pay per sale. Amazon had one of the biggest, still does I guess, but has one of the biggest affiliate programs in the world. All the state sales tax thing, they don't do affiliates in Colorado anymore because we have sales tax for it. But so when you're paying for a sale, that's like an affiliate program. You make a deal with somebody and say, I'll give you $200 for every enrollment I get from this. And then you can just put tracking software in and track it and then pay them every time you get a sale. Pay per action taken is like an affiliate program where you say, I'll pay you $10 for every lead I get. So everybody who completes the form, you can track that and you pay them back. Pay per click, which is most of what happens online, especially with Google, and now Facebook, is you're paying for, I click on the link, you get paid. The problem with that is it's pretty easy to game the system. So they can put a robot out to fake click your link, which happens, or your competitors can go and click on your link a whole bunch of times to cost you $2 every time they click it. So there's problems with that, but it's still what mostly you end up doing. Okay?
Mr. Allen?
Yes.
I don't mean to cut you off. Are you talking about Google right there?
Right.
I was at a conference 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
A Google representative from New York was there, and he talked about that because that was one of the things that a lot of people were concerned with advertising with Google ads.
Right.
That was one of their concerns. He said they now have a system that catches those and stops.
Yeah, they're trying to.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not near 100%, but they're certainly trying to, and it's in their best interest for the game to be as clean as possible, right? You know, and they're profitable enough; they don't at this point don't need to game it too much. But is that enough on that subject? I mean, we've dealt with that quite a bit, but you see how much follow up is important and how quickly it is, right?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I still can't wrap my head around sending 2 emails to them a day, because it seems like the more emails we send, the more people we just have that opt out of us. Is it that we're not sending enough educational ones, or do you have any statistics on that?
Yes and yes. You're always going to have opt outs. And you're going to have two things. You're going to have opt-outs, you're going to have people who just don't open them at all, right? And a lot of the major services now periodically require you to clean the list, which means purge every email that hasn't been opened in, let's say, 90 days or 6 months or some period of time. And so you're concerned about the number of them that don't even look at anything, because now it's just worthless. You might as well take them out yourself. And then you're worried about the number that opt out because you just beat them to death, right? The opt out rate is an interesting one. Who saw the movie Private Parts? Remember Private Parts about Howard Stern? Mm-hmm. Nobody?
Yes.
Miguel did.
If you haven't seen that movie, you got to go see it. And I'll put this in context if I hate Howard Stern. But the movie was absolutely hysterical. But the reason I brought that up is there's a line in the movie, and what they had done is they hired him. Well, he was DC 101, right? He was a DC 101, got himself in trouble when Air Florida crashed, and that was, I had just driven across 14th Street Bridge when that happened. That was a long time ago, 31 years. But Air Florida had bounced off the 14th Street Bridge after taking off at National Airport, right? So they never got enough lift, the tail clipped off, and the next morning on air, Howard Stern called Air Florida and asked how much a one-way ticket was from National Airport to the 14th Street Bridge. I mean, this is people that died under the ice one thing or another. And he had got himself suspended there, and then he got kicked off the radio in Denver when right after Columbine, he was syndicated in Denver at the time. He went on and suggested the boys should have stopped to have sex with a few of the girls before they killed them. So he's known for bad taste, right? But in the movie, there was a really interesting piece. And there's this program director, and he had been hired to CNBC in New York. And they sort of hired him sight unseen, looking at his ratings in D.C., and then ended up with this foul-mouthed guy out in left field. And it was a pretty button-down station. And they were all freaked out, but they had hired him on like a 3-year contract at a lot of money, and they really got their hands tied. And so they put this program director on trying to rein him in. And a good chunk of the movie was about this program director trying to rein him in and him being even further and further off the reservation with the guy reining him in, right? And then the ratings come in, and Howard Stern is now number one in New York, right? And so you have this scene where the ratings guy and the program director and the station manager are walking through, and they say, he says, well, people who like Howard Stern, how long do they listen to this program on an average day? And they answer something like an hour, 45 minutes. And he said, well, what about the ones that don't like him, that hate his guts? Well, that's a really interesting number. Well, how long do they listen? An average of 2 hours and 45 minutes. And he says, well, the ones that like him, what, you know, why do they say to this? And they said, they can't wait to hear what he's going to say next. And they said, well, what about the ones who don't like him? I said, same answer, right? So the the answer for the email, which is why I always remember that, is if it's interesting and entertaining and valuable, right? Look at Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh's on the air, what, 4 hours a day, right? Howard Stern is on the air, what, 24 hours a day anymore, but he's like, I don't know, he's got a satellite program for 4 hours, then he's on TV, and then he's on whatever else. If somebody is engaged, is, you know, that's the example of how long they'll listen, right? You know, I don't know what the percentage is, but some portion of Howard's audience and Rush's audience, you know, listen to him for 3 hours a day, right? But if it's just the same pitch tomorrow as yesterday, or if it looks and feels like the exactly the same thing, or if it's not very interesting, or if it's not educational, they'll just stop paying attention, right? Or they'll get annoyed and opt out. And especially it's why, see, doing an email to a cold list is a difficult thing to do, right? But doing it to get it to work, but doing an email to, you know, I mean, they call it spam, and everybody's up in arm about spam one thing or another. But doing an email to the moms of a deal that you just did that they had signed up for at the school to keep educating them on the same topic of the thing they came down and enjoyed, that's easy to keep them engaged, right? So you've got to always be aware of what is it that they're going to want to see and be interested in. And so I just did the deal at the elementary school, and now there's a Ninja Night at the school, and there's a special we're all going to go to, the Ninja Turtle movie. And that, see, that's all kind of stuff that's kind of interesting. And even if I don't go, I want to kind of keep hearing about that because Billy may want to go to it, right? So that type of thing, they'll open if you write the headline adequately, and they won't opt out because they'll want to kind of keep getting it, right? But the 22 reasons why you should sign up right now, and here's the offer again, you moron, because I sent it to you 22 times, you didn't get it, you know, that doesn't work very well, right? So again, it's a lot of educational invitations to events, and then it's continuing to build the layers of proof on what the value of your program is, in as entertaining and as many different ways that you can disguise it as possible. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
How do you organize your email contacts or your phone contacts, your people, your lead? So if you have this demographic, that age group, how do you organize that so you can send out an automatic to that group or to that group, but not to that group? How do you divide it up? How do you manage that?
Well, let's say that you were using AWeber and Calloop to give you an example, right? Each time you load a list, you're typically going to load it by Ninja Turtle leads, let's say that theater promotion. And they could load it by adult prospects, kids prospects, right? So in practical terms, usually what I see actually happening is you're loading it by event. So Fremont Elementary, whatever elementary, AMC, Ninja, Turtle event, that type of thing, right? But you can have an unlimited number of lists in both. And then you can aggregate sending to all of them or one at two, right? And so if I did that elementary school thing and now it's 6 months later and I'm going back, now I can send them a text, an email, and a voicemail that says, we're going to be back at Fremont Elementary School Wednesday. I hope you'll participate. And by the way, I remember you won that 4 weeks of lessons in uniform. I'd love for you to come back and start over and utilize that again, right? So you could target it. And again, the closer you can get to referencing personal and affiliation, the better response, right? So and again, that's whether it's direct mail or anything else. The more you're using their name, the more you're referring to something they're interested in, the more you're referring to something they're affiliated with, the more you're referring back to how they found out about you and what they did, then the more personal it becomes, right? In email, the thing used to always be you're always their first name and their name and the subject line and stuff. You know, a fair number of people are kind of immune to that nowadays, knowing how the stuff works behind the scenes. You'd be surprised. You know, I can send out 10,000 emails and I still get five or six who think I just sent it to them, right? So it's still that level of personalization. I mean, in direct mail, that's one of the things that'll get it to respond better is really looking really personal, right? I'll give you another example of that. We're going to talk a lot about different funnels. But an example of that is one time I got a whole bunch of students to bring their school directory from their school, right? And then what we did, and I'm not making this recommendation because it blew back a little bit on me, but, better to ask forgiveness or permission. But then what we did is a personal-looking handwritten letter went out to the kids from whatever mom it was that brought me the directory, okay, that then said, dear, Mrs. Smith, Philly is classmates with Joey at Leawood Elementary, and Billy has been so excited about the program, and I'm so impressed with what he's developed, me, this, and this, that I talked to the school and I lined up for them to give you a free month to come down with Billy and try it out because I think you'll be just as impressed as I am. Short version, but you get the idea. Worked like gangbusters, right? What happened in a lot of cases is Mrs. Smith that it came back from got scolded from the principal for using the directory for commercial purposes, and and then what I started doing is getting them to bring me the directory, but kind of put it in the general list and not making it that personal. But that personal is as good as I could come up with really making it work solidly, right? Now notice the components. Coming from an address in the neighborhood, handwritten, one mom to another, Billy is in class with Bobby, all mail merged in together, right? So the more you can get towards that, the higher response rate you're going to get with anything you do. And that's just in response to that list question of how much do you want to segment. See, if I can send a text message of, we're so great to, it was great meeting you at the AMC Theater. I know you were there for Ninja Turtles, and you haven't been in yet, but we're going to have Ninja Turtle Night at the school, and you're welcome to bring Joey down. And by the way, he's going to get, he's going to learn how to swing the whatever like Donatello. What does Donatello do?
He's a staff.
I'm glad you know that. Anyway, so he's going to learn the bow staff like Donatello.
I went through the first round of Ninja Turtling years ago.
Yeah, me too. I loved it. Karate Kid and Ninja Turtles. Power Rangers.
Have you seen the new one?
Yeah.
Was it good, really? I have no faith in Michael Bay. He already ruined Transformers.
I agree with that. My 6-year-old has made me go to Target or Walmart once a day for the last 6 days to buy different pieces of Ninja Turtle paraphernalia, including Donatello's bow staff, even though we have about 10 real ones in the garage, and to get whoever the nunchucks is, even though we have several real ones. In fact, where was it he was trying to bring out the nunchucks in the parking lot the other day? So my answer is, and purely anecdotally, my 6-year-old is now a Ninja Turtle every day, and I couldn't leave on when you guys were doing the Olympic thing until we did Ninja Turtle fighting 3 times. So luckily, I still win most of the time.
I was about to say, how did you do that?
Would you share some of your greatest hits in terms of direct mail? Because you shared a marker, the tip of the black marker,
yeah,
that worked really well.
Oh, that letter?
Yes.
Well, here's the question. We're now getting into, here's all the different sources. And one chunk we need to do is internet, one chunk we need to do is direct mail, one chunk we need to do is community outreach events and making it work like the conversation we were having. Let's do overview principles in this and then go into specifics. What he's referring to, not to let that be a cliffhanger, is one of the things I suggested, you got a legal pad here, right?
Yes, sir.
Here's something you can do to really make it look personal without busting your ass. Take a legal pad, get a flare pen or a Sharpie or something, and you write out the letter on the legal pad, right? And you could do one page, you could do 12 pages, it doesn't matter. Write it out in longhand, and Marty, neither you nor I should ever be allowed to do it personally, okay? But you write it out in longhand, sign it, and then you go make 1,000 copies. And then you take the same black pen and fill out their name. So now it looks like a handwritten letter just to Marty, when in fact you did a whole bunch of them, right? Now, you can't screw that up by then having an envelope and you stuck a mailing label on it, right? The envelope has to be personally handwritten as well. But especially for, like, I've always done stuff like that for, like, renewals, renewal prep, student events and stuff, because now they're like, oh, I got a handwritten letter from Master Oliver, right? And so that's an easy way to game the system. And you can game it in large numbers. Now they have all kinds of different suppliers where they'll hand address all the envelopes for you and stuff like that. And we'll get back to it. But the reason I'm saying that is it's like an ad. The most important thing with direct mail is the same thing, get it paid attention to. But if it's an envelope, the most important way to get them to pay attention to them is get them to open the damn envelope and see what's inside. Because most commercial direct mail envelope gets thrown away before they look at it. Most postcards get thrown away as they're looking at it, but, right? I mean, so the way to get an envelope mail looked at is one of three things. Master Smith mentioned it before. You were referring to 3D mail, which is a supplier. You might write that down. 3D mail results. It's the coolest thing in the world. It's kind of expensive. I've been guilty of not doing enough of it recently. It's on my agenda to do. Here's what 3D mail is. Let me see if there's something sitting around here that looks like one of their deals. I'll just tell you. One thing they can do is a bank bag. You know, like the green bank bag with a zipper? Mm-hmm. So they can do a printed bank bag that you then put your letter and stuff in the bank bag, and then they label and put the postage on the bank bag, and you get a bank bag in the mail. Okay?
How are
they
going to open that?
Yeah.
It's funny.
Another piece that they do is a little trash can. So it's a little metal or plastic trash can that they then label, and you mail in the trash can. So stacked in their mail is this trash can, right? Another thing they can do is there's a message in a bottle, so it looks like a little ship in a bottle. And so they roll up the letter and stick it in, and then you've got this clear plastic bottle that shows up in the mail, right?
So it's unique packaging.
It's unique packaging, yeah. It's all dimensional mail. In a similar vein, and they have a bunch of this stuff too, is they do interesting three-dimensional mailers, but they also do dimensional stuff that goes inside. So you could mail like a little model car, or you could mail something in the envelope that then makes the envelope lumpy. So you're picking the envelope up, but it's kind of lumpy. You're trying to figure out what the hell's in it, right? And then they have what they call grabbers. One that I've used a lot, the fake $1 million bill, right? One of the classic direct mail campaigns is a dollar bill letter. So, you know, a real dollar bill stapled to the top of the envelope or to the letter, and I use those fake $1 million bills because you can get them for like a dime a piece rather than a buck, right? But you can get what looks like a real bill, but it's a fake $1 million bill, and then staple it to the letter. Now, that doesn't get the envelope open, but it gets their attention once they open it. That is then designed to help keep reading it, right? So we just had various types of mail devices. That could be a fake FedEx envelope, a real FedEx envelope. It could be something that makes it look urgent, right? And that's why a lot of times if you, like I'll do a lot of stuff, I usually don't use FedEx, but I'll use Priority Mail. So you can do the Priority Mail envelope, and it's like $5 to mail. But for most households, that'll go on top. If you're mailing to like a principal at a school, I like doing FedEx, right? Because all the school mail comes in, but FedEx, they walk in, the principal signs for it, and now she actually opens the damn thing, right? So the rule with direct mail is the first difficult thing to do is get them not to throw it away before they even look at it, right? So all of those kinds of little devices are useful. And then the second thing is the more personal it looks and the more it looks like me sitting down and writing to you, the better off I am, right? And so we'll spend more time on it, but that's what you're talking about generally. But if you want to know the most successful, let's take it out of renewal blitz, okay? Because I'd say the most best financial return is all the crazy stuff I've always done for renewal blitzes, okay? But if you take it out of renewal blitz, probably the single most profitable was that school directory thing, okay? This mom to that mom, to 300 kids, the highest response rate, everything else, and all the pain in the ass of doing it school by school is well worth it. Okay. I'm trying to think of what else is in that vein. You know, the renewal blitzes, I've always spent like $30 a piece, you know, a whole bunch of priority mail and put all the big package of stuff in and all that kind of stuff. I mean, but we're talking about a $20,000 or $40,000 contract, and, you know, oftentimes we'll do, you know, $100,000 in extra paid polls that month. So, you know, $10,000 a man and one white here, right? So, let me think about that. We'll cycle back around. Let's go back to theoretical here. Okay. Here's this is a pure ripoff of J. Abraham, so I'll always try to acknowledge. But Abraham talks about most businesses are like a diving board. And he says they only have one pillar for getting new customers. And if something happens to that pillar, they're sunk because they only have one thing that they do. They get one thing to work, right? As long as I'm quoting Abraham, I'll quote Kennedy as well. Kennedy's comment is most industries suffer from marketing incest. In other words, they look around at what everybody else is doing. Of course, most everybody isn't very good anyway. But they'll look around at what everybody else is doing and just do the same thing everybody else is doing. And where you guys have the advantage is several of us, but certainly myself, have always been looking at every other industry and anything that's comparable to try to find things that other people are doing that we haven't been doing. You know, going all the way back to, in my case, 83, and Master Smith's case, and June Reed's case, into the 60s. But you always want to be careful of not doing the look around at what, not in this room, but the rest of the industry is doing, and just do what they do, because they're mostly morons, right? Even the ones that are fairly good are not very sophisticated. But the Abraham concept is, you can never build a viable business long-term on just one or two pillars. Okay, his concept is it's got to be like the Parthenon in Greece. You've constantly got to have layering on additional funnels, additional ways to get new customers, or in our case, students, to make a really solid business and maximize your results. Okay, and you add to that is across these different things, what has a tendency to happen in follow-up systems is people end up with this diving board by only using email because it's cheap, right? And what has a tendency to happen for all of us is we pick the one or two things that's fairly inexpensive, and that's what we focus on. We never get beyond that, right? So, like, nowadays, you've got a lot of MMA schools who only focus on, like, pay-per-click ads and search engine optimization because they're getting pretty good results. And I already use that analogy with Yellow Pages. A lot of kids' schools spend all their time on two or three or four referral systems and never get outside of that model, right? And so what you really want to do is keep figuring out different things you can layer on. The second thing you should do is you should never be fixated on doing what's cheapest. You should be doing everything you can do as long as the cost per new student is at or below a number that's your maximum that you can tolerate based upon your average revenue per student. Okay? And so again, keep in mind, this keeps coming back to haunt us of how important it is, right? A cardio program with an average of $250 average revenue per student, you get really limited in what you can do. A cardio program with an average revenue per student of $2,000, you have a lot of flexibility. A program with an average revenue per student of $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month, you can do all kinds of stuff to get a new student. Does that make sense? So don't get focused on just what's cheapest. Focus on all the different ways of getting new students, right? And Peter, to paraphrase your question in a different way, same basic question. What are the home runs between Master Moody, Master Smith, myself? Go back 40 years. What are some of the big home runs over the fences, right? A June Reed home run over the fences was television ads. You know, I remember while I was there working the switchboard, every Saturday night we were on the Kung Fu TV show. And, you know, we'd get 200 calls in 30 minutes. And I was a poor schmuck trying to, you know, point them all out. I was only there for like 2 months, but I remember it worked a couple of
times. We made all the new managers go through that.
Yeah. I think I got fired from a switchboard when I hung up on Senator Brown. That's a true story. You know, I was working right outside of June Ree's office, right? And working the switchboard for all of the schools plus for June Ree. And Hank Brown calls and says, is June there? And so my martial arts brain goes, June? Hung up on him. And I didn't tell him that, actually, until like a couple years ago. That I had done that. He said, well, yeah, all the senators are all on a first name basis. That's why he did that. I was like, yeah, well, I hung up on it.
I fired one of the presidents.
Oh, yeah. You had somebody who didn't tell you the White House called. He had a staff member who didn't tell him the White House called because George H.W. Bush wanted him to jump on Air Force One and go with him where?
One of the drug rallies that we were doing.
Yeah, he wanted him to come over the next day and jump on Air Force One and go to one of the drug rallies. And your staff member told you, what, 5 days later or something like that?
I didn't talk to him that morning.
Yeah.
And I said, this was after they called. And I said, any, you know, what's going on? How's the intros? What's looking? Any calls? No. Nothing important. Just his exact words. So then I get back and I see a handwritten note from the White House, and I said, where'd this come from? Oh, they called Saturday morning and were asking for you, but I told them you were out of town.
Now, let's not get started on employee conversation. We could go on for 4 days. But, Peter, big home runs over the years. June Ree was hitting big home runs with movie promotions going back to Enter the Dragon. Okay. Some of the biggest home runs I hit in the 80s were Karate Kid 1, Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers not as strong. It seemed like Power Rangers, the parent would take the kids, and the parent would come out convinced that it was a bad idea, and the kids would be like all excited. And so, your answer about this Ninja Turtle movie is my six-year-old type, so I'm happy, right? So. As long as they're selling.
I was just curious if you like fell asleep several times throughout the film.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But I was kind of tired. Anyway. I fell asleep for about an hour and a half in Transformers.
Mr. Reed
yeah.
was
yeah.
The,
I'm sure.
the master at demonstrations.
Yeah.
We basically did at least probably a week, five different demonstrations.
And a lot of big ones too. I mean, basketball games, center court.
Mexican football games.
Quantico a lot. The July 4th. So a lot of
that. And all the summer in the parks, they had this entertainment program in all the parks in D.C. They still have that. He has us booked on every one of those. But we did a ton of those.
Well, in Junior Institute then, I mean, that's when I was there, what would you say, 200 enrollments a month? Probably more than that.
For the 7? For the... Well, again, when I started there, they had three schools, and then we went to 12.
Let's say with 9 schools.
Yeah, when you were there before
yeah.
you left?
Yeah.
The better schools were doing 25 enrollments.
Yeah. And so probably, you know,
probably
pretty consistently. Did you sneak in? Yeah.
No, he's been here for like...
But after Marty did the, you're not up there.
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, welcome to there. Stand up and introduce yourself to everybody since you showed up 2/3 of the way through the door.
New York. My school is New York Martial Arts Academy. Pleasure to meet all you guys that are new. And this is familiar face.
And you have now 4 locations?
4.
Yeah. And you're teaching Jeet Kune Do.
Yes, sir.
70-30 adults to kids, or is it?
It's about that, like 72,
more or less 70-30 adults to kids, Jeet Kune Do. What are you charging nowadays?
$197 for the basic program, $277 for my next program, and close to $4 for the third program.
Right, and again, they're right online, but they're in frickin' New York City. So you've got a lot of room to go.
Now, where in New York?
We have one in North Waynesburg, which is the bot. It's like right on downtown Manhattan. One Tupperware.
Yes.
One in Astoria, which is closer to Midtown Manhattan. One in Little Neck, which is the outs the other side of Queens. And our newest is in Glencoe, which is downtown.
How many square feet?
All over the board.
The biggest is 8,500. The second is 4,500. The one in Glencoe is about 3,800, 3,000, and the next about 2,300.
Yeah, the big one, they've got a hell of a deal. What's your rent on the big one?
Well, we have a crazy, like...
It's like you could never replicate.
Yeah, I mean, we gutted the place. Like, you know, right. it was capital intensive, but we got like a 30-year lease with an option to buy the building. First start of refusal, like the whole
thing.
You know, you can't get that again.
Yeah, no.
How about it, Manhattan? You're in lower Manhattan?
No, I'm technically not in the city. It's New York, New York. But it's technically Brooklyn. It's North Williamsburg, which is like probably one of the most gentrified areas in New York.
Well, that's, you know, I think outside of Manhattan, rates tend to get with the what most major cities are rather than Manhattan is like off on another planet.
That's next for us. That's what we're, you know, we're about a year's off from.
Yeah, no problem. But anyway, so going back to this is, again, the idea is not to use just the cheapest sources. The idea is to use all of them that generate a new student at a price or at a cost that you can tolerate, right? And I used the example of Keith Hafner earlier. His number was he was spending $850 on average to get a new student, okay? And that number is misleading because he's doing 20 to 22 enrollments a month, but half of them were from referrals that had essentially zero cost except for staff labor. So really it was 10 of his enrollments were costing about $1,600 a piece in advertising, right? And that, a little overstated, he was doing $12,000 or $13,000 a month in advertising, right?
Is this good value?
$5,000, yeah. So the average, and is his retention was good, less than 4%. His new enrollments were $200, and this was even 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago. So the minimum entry price was $200, but the retention for a school as big as his was good. I mean, it was 3.8% or something like that. Not as good as Buzz's, but it was good. But does that principle make sense, right? See, a lot of us, what we do is we do follow-up systems, and we get stuck on email because it's free. And then we don't want to do direct mail because it's expensive. And then we rationalize we don't want to do a direct mail because, oh, the world has gone digital. But the reality is you want to do all the different things that are going to work. Does that make sense? On your external marketing, it's the same thing. So if you take these pillars, let's start thinking of it as major subject matters and go back through those home runs. Is one of them is publicity. Master Smith, talk about June Reed with his propensity for publicity.
He had a press agent. So he had a publicist. The publicist obviously got paid for every time he was in a magazine or a newspaper or TV. And he was literally on TV, at least not counting his commercials, which were running all the time. Everybody knew him for that anyway, but from his other stuff, probably at least 3 or 4 times a week, he was on TV about something. And then in the newspaper, quite frequently, he had at least every couple of weeks, they did an article on him or in the Parade magazine or something. You know, there was just a whole ton of stuff.
Yeah, he actually ended up on the cover of Parade magazine with Cheryl Tate and Bruce Jenner at one point. Yeah,
which is, what, 100 million circulation?
It's the single biggest magazine in the United States. I'm not sure if that's the right number, but it's a lot.
Jack Anderson. Yeah. Not Jack Anderson.
Walter Anderson.
Walter.
But think about it this way, is one pillar should be publicity. And by publicity, I mean free press anywhere you could get it. But kind of in order of importance still is major network television. So evening news type of thing. And then daily newspaper,
and again, I know they're kind of dying, but daily newspaper, local radio, and then beneath those three, you can kind of keep going, because nowadays in the diffuse media, digital world, there's all kinds of different places that you can get coverage. Some of them more valuable than others, but there's everything from at the low end, Facebook or Google discussion groups of moms or of fitness-oriented people, and places like, what is it, Meetup, where different groups post events and stuff, to news on things like AOL. One of the things that Jimmy pulled off one time is at his tournament, he did the Democrats versus the Republicans. And because he was the martial arts instructor for Congress, right? So he put the Democrats in blue pads. What was it? That'd be blue. So the Democrats were in blue pads and uniforms, and the Republicans were in red pads and uniforms, and they did team fights and duked it out. And he got on CNN, headline news, every 30 minutes for 48 hours, internationally. So, I mean, this was running in Russia, and it was running in Washington, D.C., and everywhere in between, right? So let's make that one of the pillars, as much publicity as you can. And that's everything from you got the new black belt, and they put them on the cover of the school website, and they put them on the school, the high school newspaper. I've had that more than once. New black belt valedictorian, flying sidekick on the front cover of the high school newspaper that goes out to everybody in the high school, all the way through the major daily paper, major TV networks, okay? So that let's make that one pillar. Let's make the other pillar, and I'm going to separate these artificially, I'll point out, but one is referral systems. Let's make another one family add-ons. Okay, so what referral systems, it merits pointing out that broke school owners think that if they have great instruction and people like them, they're going to bring their friends down in droves. Doesn't work that way, okay? The main reason it doesn't work that way, aside from it's a busy world in one thing or another, is that your students aren't great at selling your program to their friends. Hell, most of your staff aren't that great at selling your program, right? So your students generally aren't that great at selling their program, and if they go try to do it too much on their own, they hit all the wrong topics. Yeah, I just signed a 3-year contract with these guys. I'm going to pay them $18,000, but boy, is it worth it, and you should come down with me, right? I mean, conversations end up happening like that. But referral systems mostly work based on events. Doesn't matter whether it's adults or kids. And it's based upon creating reasons for your student to bring their friends to the school for something that they're going to be excited to come participate in. And then using that to generate a lead and follow up with a lead, right? Birthday parties, pizza parties, you know, hi, you were doing UFC night at Willie's Wild Wings. You did that glow chuck thing. Everybody went to Sterling last year. How many enrollments did you get off that glow chuck thing? Yeah, so 10 enrollments from one night from a bring your friend to do a glow chuck seminar, right?
And they have to keep the glow chuck, okay. So they had something to remind them.
Yeah, so.
As well as a 2 weeks free lesson.
So pillar one, publicity. Pillar two, referral systems. Almost all referral systems that work best are based upon events and being able to capture buddy information. Obviously, there's no reason in the world not to give everybody VIP passes, pass up for their friends. Doesn't work very well. No reason or not at all to not put their pictures on Facebook and tag them and do all that stuff. But it's secondary to this. Next pillar.
Birthday parties is a big one for us.
Absolutely. And we're going to go back to this. But events like birthday parties, pizza parties, glow chuck day, whatever it is, right? I made family add-ons a separate category, and it doesn't matter which direction you're going, as far as I'm concerned, but most people who run kids programs don't work effectively enough to enroll the entire family, right? And then they make the added mistake of like the Melanie Schumann thing of like having all these age appropriate classes. And now there's two kids in the family, and they would have to come to different times. The mom and dad have to come in, and they have to come to adult classes. And now you're much less likely to get more than one in the family, because they're, the biggest constraint that almost all of your students have is not money, it's time. Okay? The average soccer mom, you tell her to have to drive to the karate school 6 days a week at different times, and that's a deal breaker, right? You know, help me getting my kids into our karate school, the biggest deal breaker is time, is making the time to drive back and forth, everything else going on, right? So family add-ons, for the kids market, you should be able to add on about half of the kids, one or both parents. And if you heard Sterling's numbers and Thornton's numbers, they said it was 75%, 25%, or maybe 65%, 35%. But most of that number was, if it's this, is that for every two kids we enroll a parent. Because we're doing essentially zero marketing aimed at adults. We're doing all the marketing aimed at kids, the nanny, mom, and dad. Okay? A little overstatement, but that's exactly what our
I have at least a dozen that are five members.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's keep going on the pillars. So let's name the next pillar community outreach activities. But we can subset that into community events and then to kind of host beneficiary type of relationships. If you're in the kids market, it's obvious that elementary school, daycare, summer camps are a marvelous host beneficiary. Hi, you were having great results with like Texaco and companies like that, right? So tell us, give a brief overview of that.
Just like a self-defense seminar, corporate seminar.
Right. So again, and we're going to expand upon that, but think in terms of anything you would do for kids. If we're talking about kids, there's a comparable for adults. Anything you would do for adults, there's a comparable for kids, right? So if I'm in the adult market, where are they during the day? Kids at elementary school, adults are mostly at work, right? So now it's, you know, anything from I'm doing cardio kickboxing for women, so I go do all the nurses in a major hospital, do something for them, I do all the waitresses at a major restaurant chain, et cetera, to I'm doing a Krav program, I come in and do a practical self-defense fitness seminar for Texaco or Mobil or Apple or anything in between, right? So during the day, they're there. Where are they at night? Well, maybe. Or they're at soccer league, or they're at a softball league, or they're at Kiwanis, or they're at JC's, or they're at a fitness center, or they're at what else? What else are places where adults might socialize as a group?
A bar,
yeah, absolutely, right.
A lot of parents are
team activities. Right. Bowling league. So think about where is it that your target audience is hanging out in any different day part, right? Where are they on the weekends? Where are they during the week, right? So they're going to a movie theater. They're going to a softball league. They're going to work. They're going to some kind of social activity. Maybe they're involved in a charitable event. Those are all places that you get them all together. Churches. So you can do things with the major churches. So, you know, again, we'll subset this, but think in terms of organizations. And that could be public school, private school, daycare. It could be employer, et cetera, right? And then you have you have all types of different media
But let's make artificially, because again, we can subset this any way we want. Let's talk in terms of broadcast media. But also targeted media. Right? So now, one pillar could be, like, again, we were talking about home runs. Junior Institute going back to the 70s, one home run is being on major broadcast TV. Another home run was being in the Washington Post. Another home run was massive publicity everywhere you looked. Another home run was five big demos a week, anywhere and everywhere you could be. Anything from the 4th of July demonstration on the Washington Mall with 500,000 people to a little thing for the agents at Quantico to a little thing at the local high school, right? So massive frequency of that, but just all over the place, right? For in Denver, we've had massive home runs with like big expos, kids, all about kids, big fairs and expos, massive home runs with infomercials, 27.5 minute long form TV, massive home runs with 30-second spots, although I will say every time there was massive pucker factor because it was pony up $30,000-$40,000 and it was either a home run or it was strikeout or base hit and it was hard to predict, right? So it wasn't predictable, but when it hit big, it hit really big. Massive home run with movie theaters pretty consistently over the years. I first figured that out with Karate Kid 1, and probably only knew to figure it out because I had heard stories about Junior Institute with Enter the Direct, right?
How specifically do you guys set that up? Who are you talking to, and what is the benefit to the movie theater?
You know, the short answer to that, well here's the full answer, is there's like almost an unlimited amount of content in the member site if you go log in that has everything from photos to how to set it up to booth setup and things. And the short answer is National Cine Media controls about 80% of the movie screens in the United States. And so you can just go directly to them and rent the booth for anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a weekend. And then you don't even have to worry about what's in it for the theater. The more complete answer is the better rapport you build with the theater, the more cooperation you're going to get and the more flexibility they're going to get with you, right? So take two examples. Take the Westminster School. They're both Mile High Karate Schools and the Sterling School. Kim and Greg don't really have any rapport with the theater, and the people who were there before never built rapport with the theater. So they did 60 appointments, 140 leads this weekend. Is that the right number, more or less? With the theater manager being as uncooperative as was possible, without him blatantly avoiding the contract they have with National Center Media. In their case, their theater basically lets them go in anytime they want, do whatever they want. Rarely do they have to pay for anything, and occasionally they sponsor other events and so forth. So that's been a long haul of bringing them baskets of muffins from what's the horrible restaurant that you like?
They do donuts. They do, we do everything.
Yeah, bring them boxes of cookies and donuts and dropping by, and you know, so they've been doing a lot of, you know.
We outfitted all the staff in uniforms and gave the upper class managers a year program, and then on down to where even the lower ticket takers had a 2 month program.
The biggest movie theater home run I ever had, by the way, Peter, was I had all of the Man and AMC theaters in Denver where every employee in the theater was wearing a Mile High Karate uniform. Everybody who bought a ticket got a guest pass. There were signs and posters and stuff on all four walls to the point that I walked in and somebody said, I didn't know you owned a chain of theaters also. Right? And then we did little demos in front of the screen before the movies. Now, we were in, I'm going to guess right now, 12 different theaters. It was somewhere between 10 and 15. Of course, that was for six locations. But even that, it was a logistics nightmare. But we had passes, booths, on-screen ads for free, booth for free,
passing out the coupons for free, decorations on everything, all the employees in uniform. The quid pro quo was I gave them $1 million in free lessons, which was the face value of the 1 month free passes we gave out, a whole bunch of free years and one thing or another. And the way I got them to do it was saying, I want to give you $1 million worth of stuff to give away to tie into Karate Kid 2, right? Nowadays, it's harder to do that because they now know there's a value attached, and they now have a contract with National CineMedia. So in most cases, you have to go through National CineMedia to get on screen, and you have to go to National CineMedia to do the booth and to do any of the other stuff. Although, if you build enough rapport with the theater, they'll let you go do stuff without running it through the national company. That doesn't encroach upon buying advertising, right? So theater ads, you're not going to talk them into on screen because that's coordinated nationally. A booth, a lead box.
We pay, we went through the national group first and paid for, quite a few times until we got to know all the managers. So you go in there with your hand out, not giving anything, then you're never going to get in there. You've got to pay your dues. And so we did for quite a while. And every time they have something, the local cinemas do their own sponsors to raise funds for their own location. And in the summer, they do morning matinees, and all the campers and everything all go there. So we sponsor that for them. But we also get to go in during those movies that show in the morning for 2 hours and set up our booth there. We have banners that pretty much have been there ever since The Karate Kid. But, in that opening of The Karate Kid, we did 120 new enrollments, not intros, but 120 enrollments in 60 days.
Yeah. And that the morning movies, of course, we kind of passed the game for this summer. But the morning movies, one of the things we found, by the way, is if you're in there for the Tuesday morning replay of Shrek or whatever, a lot of those movies are all the different day camps and daycares bringing a busload of kids there. And it's an interesting venue to build a rapport with the daycare people. So they bring 20 kids, which isn't terribly helpful for us other than just passing out stuff to the kids. But you can now build relationship with the people who brought them, right? And so now it's another venue into those day camps. But home runs, the gym teacher for the day in elementary schools where we get permission slips and go do that. I've done thousands of enrollments over the years from that. The after-school enrichment program tied into the gym teacher for the day, thousands of enrollments over the years from that. What would you pick up on, Jeff? What else have you had home runs with?
Well, obviously those same ones. And especially, we try to capitalize on the things that we're doing normally, so we don't have to go out of our way. One of the things we picked up on from summer camp, we take, in our summer camps, we run it for 8 weeks. We probably generated this year probably 60,000 just from those summer camps, which is just a 6-hour camp from 9 to 3, which really the school isn't doing much anyway. But one day a week we have pool day.
Yeah.
And there's a couple different pools we go to. And the pools don't open until like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, depending on which one you go to. So our camp started at 9 o'clock, so we would always do our workout at the park. And so we would set it up like a demo where the kids are doing the nunchucks or bo staff, and then all the other buses are lining up for the pool while they're lining up, and they have to stand in line for probably 20 or 30 minutes. We pretty much provide the entertainment for them and hand out guest passes and talk to the camp counselors and invite them in for a free month, and then they can also hand out guest passes and get the parents involved. So a few little things like that.
There's not me, not Master Smith, but there's schools that have written, driven the vast majority of the enrollments. Bill Clark for years was just send all the staff out with VIP passes and a clipboard and make appointments. VIP. Now, my joke about that is if you have two or three staff members that you want to fire, is just send them out VIP for a month and they'll probably quit. it's extremely effective and it's very difficult in practice to get to happen, right? And
well, that reminds me of another one we did for the Relay for Life.
Yeah.
We were a sponsor for Relay for Life, and what they do on the weekends, you know, and they do it probably, you know, 3 months or 6 months before their big fundraiser in each city, and each little town has their own little group of people who are running the organization, and then there's bigger groups around that even goes national. But so we hooked in with them. They did free advertising for us. They printed up all of our flyers and mailers, and we had gift certificates for summer camp. We had gift certificates for a month of lessons. We had a gift certificate for free uniform. And then we sold those, all the money they sold them for us. So we didn't even have to man the booths, all the booths that were going up. They set up our little display, and people could buy a month of karate lessons and make a $20 donation. And they got a uniform and a month of lessons. And so they sold a bunch of those for us. And we did that 2 years in a row. So.
And then that reminds me of a couple more. One is, and we did this with Project Concern International. We did it with Chuck Norris, Kick Drugs of America. Is we did a fundraiser where we printed, and you can go get these printed for dirt cheap, is raffle ticket booklets. So raffle ticket booklets, but they went and sold like, I think we did 1994-97 or 1497, a one-month pass uniform, and sent all the students out to raise as much money as they could for Kick Drugs of America in one case with these raffle coupon books, and now they would sell it, but the raffle coupon book has name, address, phone number on the ticket. So when they brought the thing back, we had all the contact information. Then we hit the phones to get them to, and we did thousands of leads on that. Another one is what you reminded me of is children's hospital flyers. Three iterations of that. Yes, one iteration is I used to do 16-page newsletter pamphlets, and now newsprint's more expensive nowadays, so it's harder to do it as cheaply. But 16-page pamphlets, half of which was about Walk for Children. We've got our own 501c3 KICS, Kids Involved Caring for Kids. But we would do a walk, and we would pass out the flyers about the walk under the auspices of 501c3 into all the elementary schools. But it was a 16-page pamphlet, half of which was advertising promotion for Mile High Karate, half of which was for the walk. And we would do, I don't know, 150,000 of those that they would pass out directly to the kids. The next iteration of that is we did it as a fundraiser for Children's Hospital, which was then a $49 thing that basically just said, you know, call us, write a check for $49 for Children's Hospital, get a month free and a uniform. Tim and Dave Kovar took that and did a fundraiser for the Teen Center. And we were printing the flyers at 100,000 at a pop. So we'd print the flyers where they'd have the printer do. Every 30, there'd be a plain piece of blue paper. And then we would bundle the flyers in sets of 30 and then envelope them up with 600 kids for Lee Willett Elementary or whatever. And we'd get the school district to then put them out in the school mail. So we could take them to the district office. They would put it out in the school mail. And then the schools would put them out in the teacher's boxes, and they would be distributed directly for us for free. The Kovars are still doing a lot of that, as far as I know, in Sacramento.
A little harder to get some of that done these days.
A little bit, but, you know.
You have good, I mean,
I have
trouble just walking into an element.
I have persistence and persuasion. But
you mean money?
Well, no, none of this was because it was paid for, right? You know, it's like even over the years, I've had Chuck Norris do a bunch of stuff for me. I never paid him a penny to do anything. It was all about relationship. And like with the schools, you know, I went and talked to whoever at the district level was, and a couple of these districts, they had, you know, policies against putting out commercial literature, but this was under a 501c3. They had policies against distributing things. And we weren't always successful, but I mean, I had some districts that would say, you have to go get permission from each of the principals. But I had, like in this case, Children's Hospital, I had the person who's in charge of the charity at Children's Hospital do a little letter on their letterhead, fax it out to all of the elementary schools and fax it out to the district coming from them. Then I put my staff in shirts that were Children's Hospital logo and Mile High Karate logo. So when they walked into the school, they had this big Children's Hospital logo, and they didn't say they worked for Children's Hospital, but it was, we're working with Children's Hospital to do a special fundraiser. And we, can you tell me where the teachers' boxes are? We've got these sorted out, so they go out to the teachers' pockets, packets in the Friday folders, and we just walk in and do it. So, you know what it is, Master Smith, is so many owners give up at the first no or at the first pushback, and they don't figure out what the right angle is to get the thing to happen, right? Peter, I'm trying to think, because he gave me some more memories here, but I will say this. My natural predisposition as a multi-school owner is to do things that I can orchestrate and spend money on rather than as labor intensive. And the reason that I shifted the organization from employees to owner-operators is owner-operators are much more likely to go be entrepreneurial and do stuff. When I did the first, second Karate Kid, Ninja Turtles the first round, Power Rangers the first time, it was with six schools and it was a bloody nightmare. Because literally I was in the car going from theater to theater to theater to make sure the damn guy showed up and that he was doing it. And I was yelling at him to make sure. Another big one, by the way, was Scouts. We've had huge results over the years with Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. And Boy Scouts, in their national charter or their national rule book, they have a prohibition against anything related to martial arts, motorcycles, and boxing. And it doesn't make any damn difference in the world if you talk to the right person. But we used to do the Denver Metro Jamboree, and there'd be 40,000 Boy Scouts. And we had set it up where you had swing mats, a little classroom, and all of them would come through in groups of 5 or 10 and do a little introductory class. And while they're doing the introductory class, we get the parents to fill out the information, schedule them for appointments. We had one time, I remember so many trash bags full of leads, I could barely get them in my car. And frankly, another home run when I started with zero money is it was I was doing flyers door to door, and I had a big satellite map of the area, and I had a yellow highlighter, a pink highlighter, a green highlighter, and a blue highlighter. And so every street that I did flyers on, I'd do a yellow highlighter, and the second time I did them, I did a green. Third time I did them, I did a blue. And then when some money would come in, I'd direct mail to the same ones that I had just done.
That was when you first moved out here, when you were more labor intensive.
Yeah. It was every penny that came in went back into marketing, and it was, literally for the first year and a half, and all I did was grand openings, right? So I opened 5 schools back to back. So I would go do the grand opening. But literally it was going door to door and knocking on doors, and then every penny that came in would go back into advertising. And some of what I was doing back then wouldn't work now. The local community newspapers we did a lot of, and that was working okay back then. When we started getting bigger, I was doing a lot of daily newspaper, which I wouldn't do now. But what I would do, by the way, and I brought some samples of these. Master Smith, there's like 3 things back there on that counter. Oh, I'll grab it. And again, Peter, we hit a home run for quite a while with lead boxes, and then we were feeding in so much junk traffic, I decided not to do it anymore. But with lead boxes, it was, I had full-time staff that went and distributed lead boxes, and then I had part-time staff in a boiler room with 6 outgoing lines that did phone calls. I used to have 4 computers and 16 phone lines running down the basement of my house. We were doing broadcast fax. That's what initiated that lawsuit going all the way to the Supreme Court. And what the fax machines would do, the software would spend most of the day skimming for numbers. In other words, they'd call every number in the Denver metro area, and if they got a fax tone, it would log it, and then it would send it. Do you ever see that bank of... At my house in Genesee, I had 16 phone lines. Phone company thought I was crazy. But I had 16 phone lines, 4 computers, 4 phone lines on each box. And they would skim for fax numbers, and they would... I wouldn't recommend that right now, by the way. You know, and those are all home runs, right? So what I'm trying to tell you are things that over the years ended up with hundreds or thousands or many thousands of students, right? And of those things that I could pull the trigger on today, again, that would have that kind of results is infomercial. Theoretically, although I've never done it, would be long-form radio. The other thing that would work just fine is newspaper inserts. Newspapers are dying, but this is the company that, that's why I brought this. I got this in the mail. It is called Red Plum, but they have a contract with most of the major daily newspapers. And then you can zip code target it, and target it. Actually, their targeting now is much more precise. But what they do is, if you're a subscriber to the newspaper, they put in the Wednesday edition with all the food coupons. So you notice this is mostly big major advertisers, right? So you have DirecTV. This is the one that showed up in my mailbox, by the way. ADT, DirecTV, Genghis Grill, that's Chase's new favorite restaurant, by the way, Jeff. King Supers, so the food coupon ads. Usually you'll get Target or Walmart in here. We've got Safeway, and then we've got, what's this, Sears Outlet, and we've got something else in here, Office Max and Kohl's, right? So, you know, there's a lot of people who still have a subscription to the daily newspaper, and the newspapers, by the way, sell subscriptions for just Sunday, or for Wednesday, Sunday, or for the whole week. The reason they sell subscriptions that way is there's a lot of moms with kids who get Wednesday and Sunday because they want the paper, not to read the paper, but they want the insert, right? So advertising into the insert still works like gangbusters. And you can buy, well, what do we determine? 8.5 by 11, two-sided, full color for 7 cents a piece? What's that? No. I used to buy it a nickel a piece. I think it's 7 cents a piece now. So if you go buy 2,000 of them,
are those the ones you print and give to them, or they print?
No, they print. They do everything. You just give them the artwork, right? So it's about 7 cents a piece. Like our grand opening plan, when we opened Westminster to begin with, was 5,000 postcards, 50,000 inserts, 5,000 postcards, 50,000 inserts, 5,000 postcards, and the postcards were very targeted by compiled list, and this is pretty much saturation box, right? But over the years, I've had big home runs with full-page TV guide ads, which of course you wouldn't do anymore because I'm not sure they even exist anymore. The actual TV guide exists, but the TV guide in the Sunday paper doesn't because it's 500 channels and one thing or another. I had pretty good results with ROP ads in the newspaper, which I wouldn't do now. I had really good results with targeted newspaper inserts. I wouldn't do a full run, but by targeted geographically, which makes it more appropriate for you guys. And that's the way you do that, is you go directly to Red Plum. Over the years with direct mail, and this is back again to your question, Peter, is the times I've had the best results with direct mail is continually keeping leads warm. Or is something I could do like that school directory thing where it was very personalized. Or it was a grand opening where I'm going to plunk down quite a bit of money. I haven't had as good a result going to cold list, even narrowed down pretty thoroughly compiled, to get a lot of results. And Master Smith said earlier, he and I both used to get really good results from Valpak, Money Mailer, those types of things. And I haven't seen any good stats recently. Some of the big direct response marketers I follow a little bit, a couple of them are doing pretty good in Valpak with like 8.5 by 11 folded down. So instead of just their little thing, you have like four times the amount of space, or I guess it would actually be eight times the amount of space. So you get them to print 11 by 17 folded, then folded again, and then it goes in the envelope. What we do for the franchises with Valpak and Money Mailer and so forth is it's only like when we're going to do a grand opening blitz, we'll add that to the mix, right? But the rest of the time, we don't do much. Any other big home runs that you can think of, Master Smith or Master Moody?
Well,
covered a lot of them. I think a lot of the things can work a lot better if you do them correctly.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like birthday parties, like working with schools and those kind of things. There's a lot of going into more detail later when we get to those individually. But a lot of these things can work just 5 or 10 times better. You know, like birthday parties, for example, a lot of times people don't do birthday parties because they get 0 or 1 person per party.
Yeah.
You should be in, 5 or 6 or a good number. We target 50% of the people who attend enroll. So, you know, if you do those right, I mean, to me, those are the home runs, is to do those things correctly. Otherwise, you just do a lot of work and you don't get results and then you get frustrated and then it's...
I had a friend of mine for quite a while who was doing 40, 50 enrollments a month for birthday parties. And behind the scenes, really what it was is he was aggressively and never-endingly following up with them, direct mail, et cetera. And a lot of the enrollments didn't come immediately. They came 3 months, 6 months, 9 months later. So what you could argue is he was getting 20 enrollments a month from direct mail, but the entire lead list was the ones that were generated from birthday parties. See, Peter, that's all the home runs I can think of over the years, top of my head, right?
The point of the pillars is you need to have more, you have multiple methods. Right. Yeah. You know, like sometimes some people are just living off of Groupon, right. For example, that they've got just enormous numbers from Groupon, which is awesome. But, you know, the worry is, and everybody will tell you, you know, that's not going to last forever. So then they're going to potentially have a really dead zone.
Yeah.
And what's critical in those kind of, when you do have a home run, is you're really efficient. So some of the other things we talked about is you're really efficient about making sure you still have really good closure rates, you still upgrade everybody, you handle it, you know, and I think that'll keep you. And
well, you have to do the Parthenon, because if you're getting 150 intros a month from Groupon, you still want to do all the other stuff, including heavy direct mail, text, voicemail, email to all the Groupon leads that didn't enroll to keep them warm and get them back in. So you want to be doing all that stuff. The a couple other home runs now is we had 486 enrollments in a month. And it was, we did a whole bunch of stuff, but the key part of it was we had Jason Davis Rank, who was the Green Ranger or some damn thing, and we promoted big intro classes, Come Meet Tommy, the Power Rangers. I just, Greg Macy, who's not here right now, because I think he's doing this right now, is I gave him the idea. He went and spent a ridiculous amount of money on a Ninja Turtle costume.
For real?
You may have, it looks like it's in the movies, you know, $6,000 for the costume. But he was going to have just the Ninja Turtle wander through a live event. I said, no, let's do take a class with Donatello or whoever the hell it is. And so he's promoting all over the place, come do a class with Donatello. And then they're doing a series of introductory classes where the port smuck in the rubber costume is teaching an introductory class supported by 2 real instructors, right? When we did that, we actually just ran them through a funnel. And so they had a funnel where they could buy a poster, get an autograph, and then the funnel was give us $99 for the introductory thing, and then we flipped them into enrollment when they came into school from there. So we had big numbers with that. We had big numbers, you know, and some of these things are kind of hard to replicate, but you want to keep looking for them. We had big numbers when we had Chuck Norris in town. So, I mean, we had 1,500 people show up at one of our schools and line around the building, and not only the fire inspector, but half the police department managing traffic, and half of them wanting to get a picture with him. And all this having been said is that, again, my predisposition over the years was I'd rather spend money than to try to get 20 different people to go do this stuff for me. And I would rather do it in predictable ways that I can automate rather than in less predictable ways. And human beings are, in my mind, inherently unpredictable, no matter how good the system is, right? But the takeaway from that, if you're a single school, is automate everything you can automate, centralize and control everything you can centralize and control, right? And then, on top of that, have really clear systems so you're not reliant on whether he's in a good mood today or not, but where they're so well-trained and it's so systematized that you can get it all to work, right? I heard one of the consultants in the industry lambasting birthday parties. Well, you know, I don't know. I've done hundreds of enrollments from birthday parties over the year. I've never been in a karate birthday party myself. I've never taught a karate birthday party myself. I've never cut a cake myself, but I've had staff that did it, right? So, you know, hundreds, if not over 1,000 enrollments over the years, and I've never been to one of them, right? Had the manual, taught them what to do, told them what to do, but I wasn't there. So you don't pick this based upon what it is you're necessarily going to want personally to do. It's based upon what can you delegate, what can you automate, what can you spend money on. And again, you take Keith Hafner as an example. I've given him all kinds of community outreach ideas I couldn't get him to do. But the problem is, every day he gets up, he goes to school, he goes home, he sits by his pool, and he works out, and he lays in his tanning bed, and then he takes a nap, and then he reads his novel, and then he goes back to the school. And the ideas I give him would interrupt that time. So he'd rather spend an extra $4,000 than usurp his personal time. And he's right, by the way, right? At that point, you know, when you're making $500,000, $700,000 a year, whatever, your time is more valuable than the marginal, you know, expense. Okay. A lot of things that have been a trickle over the years is, I mean, one time we were flooding the schools with lead boxes, but I don't like them particularly. Rat cards is a nice trickle. You get a bunch of those out. Bandit signs are a nice trickle. Signs and posters and neighborhood business windows are, you know, can be a nice little trickle. Being in the little school newsletters and the community newsletters and stuff can be a nice trickle. Doing something with the management company in a big apartment complex or something where they promote to their clientele can be a trickle. The thing I would say mostly, and it's important for everybody to make a note of this, the only constant in your marketing is the principles never change and the media changes regularly. And what I mean by that is, as soon as you get something to change in the newspaper, if you get something to change in the mail, as soon as you get something to change in the newspaper, it gets stale and you have to change it. As soon as you get something going great in the elementary schools, Murphy's Law is something's going to come and interrupt it. And anytime you have, you've got to be constantly learning and constantly evolving and constantly changing and constantly overlaying, because the only constant in your business over a 10-year period, 20-year period, 30-year period, is a lot of things are going to continue to change, although the underlying principles are going to remain the same. Does that make sense? And so many times we get people who come into this environment and they want the one or two secrets. And the reality is here's 20 things that are going to work, but the secret is keep plugged in, keep learning, keep looking for new things. And Jan, you've encountered this where things that you were doing 2 years ago went stale. And a lot of times they go stale because your staff gets stale, they get bored, right? We've had a lot of things I did over the years where we stopped doing it because I couldn't motivate the staff to do it anymore. Joe Corley was telling me recently, you know, all of Bill Clark's staff are convinced the VIPs don't work anymore. Why? They don't want to go work them, right? That's it. I mean, works just fine, but they've got themselves convinced it doesn't work. They're not going to go work them, and there's not much he can do to, you know, cattle prod their ass every day to get them to go do it. So he's got to be looking for other things to do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. But going back to these pillars, is certainly nowadays you have the pillar of online advertising. Although really you have to think about that as being multiple pieces, right? Is all Groupon is a new iteration of Valpak. So you have Google is trying to imitate Groupon. Groupon is trying to imitate Amazon now, by the way.
The difference, and the big difference, is that Valpak you have to pay for and Groupon you don't.
They pay you, right?
Exactly.
Because, again, the Google has ushered in the age of pay-per for performance, which is wonderful for us, assuming it's a media you can get to perform, right? And sooner or later, by the way, you're going to be able to do all kinds of stuff with TV with that, because they're suffering enough and they're now geo-targeting enough, you'll be able to pay for performance with that. That was one of the Google projects that they gave up on, was absorbing television advertising and make it response media. But with the internet, there's multiple components, right? So one component is all of this stuff feeds into either a phone call, a visit, a website, perhaps a text, right? But it all feeds into they have to contact you through some mechanism, or they have to give you information that then you reach out to them and contact them, right? So all of this stuff feeds into info call, walk-in, website, or maybe they text for more information, right? Is there any other mechanisms that they can contact you that I'm thinking about? I mean, it used to be direct mail. They all mail you a postcard or something. Rarely do we do that anymore. But it all feeds into they have to contact you. So in that sense, the website is not an advertising media. It's an intermediate step to an info call, right? But the internet is the new Yellow Pages. Certainly, Google Local is trying to exactly be the Yellow Pages or Google Plus, right? But Google generally as a search engine, as is Bing and Yahoo, really is the internet age of I'm looking for something and I Google it, just like I used to look at the Yellow Pages. So you've got to consider that as a key component. The next thing... now, I'll cover this when we get to the internet. But the next element of online is in getting to people in places that you're now not doing the Yellow Pages, but you're doing a magazine ad or you're doing a newspaper ad, where you're showing up someplace that they're looking at other things. And that's what all the retargeting is about, right? So let's say I went to Google or I went to Amazon, searched for something, showed a little bit of interest. Then the retargeting is now showing you display ads all over the place. That's now more like a magazine ad, but it's targeted to what you're interested in, right? So the internet now always has been, but it's now a way they're getting it to work, right? Think about this. Internet advertising started with mostly banner ads. Banner ads never worked particularly well, right? But then it went to pay-per-click. Now the retargeting is taking it for pay-per-click back to banner ads. But the banner ads are working because they're getting in front of somebody who's hot to trot for that particular thing rather than just showing up on a general site. Does that make sense? So understand how the principle never changed, right? But the next thing about online is that one piece of it is Yellow Pages, the other piece of it is the couponing. And the other piece is it's an educational media. And it's also an entertainment media. Right? The number one property online is Google. But Google is a search engine. Right? The number one place where people go to be entertained is YouTube. Also owned by Google. The number one place where people go to buy something is Amazon. Right? So think in terms of number one is Google, number two is YouTube, number three is Amazon. So with Google, mostly what's happening is I'm going to research a topic or I'm going to buy something or I'm looking for a plumber or something like that, and I go type it in and I find stuff, right? The way that we can also utilize the system, because, see, right now in the industry it's mostly... kind of haves and have-nots. MMA schools can focus on pay-per-click, like how you do a ton of traffic on pay-per-click and SEO, and your schools in New York do too. Team Took does too. I would assume you're doing big numbers with that. But you're in the same market as, let's say, with Mile High Karate we were in 1989. In a peak market where, in that case, it was driven by like Karate Kid, right? But with the kids' market, most of the kids' schools aren't doing much with pay-per-click because there's not a lot of soccer moms out typing in martial arts lessons, Allentown, Pennsylvania, looking for martial arts lessons, right? They're not opening the Yellow Pages. That's like 20 out of the last 30 years because the Yellow Pages wasn't worth a crap for most of us unless we were on TV and driving the traffic, you know, secondhand there anyway. However, the way you game the system is entertainment and education. Because there are a lot of soccer moms who are looking for ADD treatment therapy, ADD solutions for elementary age kids. And so now, if you create a page, you create placement, you create pay-per-click under ADD solutions for parents, now there's a bunch of traffic there. There's also traffic for parents who are looking for a solution for mildly autistic kids and something that they can do to solve it. There's also parents who are looking for a solution for asthma and different types of things like that. There's also parents who are looking for solutions for behavioral problems. Again, look at that total transformation program. There's also parents who are looking for party ideas, so birthday party ideas. There's parents who are out looking for stuff like that, so now you show up. So the way you get the kids market to work online is you benefit from education and then drive them into you're the solution, and you benefit from entertainment, show them how this is something that's interesting, and you can do that through buying pay-per-click, search engine optimization, driving them to a web page that's educational, that then turns them into an opt-in that then educates them about the value martial arts has for solving that problem. Does that make sense? Because what a lot of kids' schools try to do right now is they try to do the lazy approach, which is have their karate school page and go advertise for parents looking for martial arts lessons for their kids, and then they're disappointed because there aren't enough martial arts lessons looking for lessons for their kids to get enough traffic, right? But they try to buy pay-per-click, and there's not enough inventory of clicks. But there is a lot of inventory of clicks of parents looking for solving problems with school. There is a lot of inventory of clicks for all those things.
Regarding SEM, which is pay-per-click, what is, for some of those who have some experience here, what's a good pay-per-click price per click?
It depends. I've done a lot of work with pay-per-click, and it depends. Like his market in New York, it's going to be a lot higher. I know we've done some stuff in Miami. It's high. Phoenix is not too bad. It's very dependent. I mean, you're doing like G2Bell, right?
Yeah, but it's all on the conversion. Like you want to track what the conversion is worth to. It's not about the click itself. You can drive tons of garbage traffic.
Stand up and say that louder because it's the answer I was getting ready to give. So,
stand up. It's all about cost per conversion, not cost per click. Because you could drive, as Steven was saying, a lot of display ads without a remarketing, without the first step. And you'll get 60 cents clicks. But sometimes I have words that I paid $5 for because I'm
happy to
convert.
Yeah.
It's a $20 conversion. I know what my numbers are thereafter, and I'm happy.
Yeah, that's why, like on Facebook, why it's important to have a separate page. Because you don't know whether your lead comes in from that. You can't track your leads after the fact. I mean, that's the whole thing about the internet, or with some of this stuff, is you can actually track it independent of the client telling you what the lead is. That's really, if you can do that, that's much, much better. Because otherwise, our staff has to ask, or we ask, and they don't even remember sometimes how they first heard about it.
Well, and what they tell you isn't very reliable.
Yeah, I heard that from the internet. Well, what did you, then you got to start tracking it. They don't even know.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, to cover that, yeah, what he said is exactly right. But it's not bad to spend $10 for a click if you're going to, it's very dependent on the type of market you've got and where you are and everything else.
There is not a right answer to that question because it's kind of like saying, in one hand, how much did it take to fly from Denver to New York? Well, are you going first class? You're going coach? You book it a year out? You booked it the same day? You're doing one way. I mean, there's a lot of variables that they're always messing with the algorithm. And so day to day, week by week, it might be different. And then there's differences in markets. And so like you're an attorney, personal injury attorneys might pay $200 for a click. And the reason they're paying $200 for a click is there's a whole bunch of them having a feeding frenzy for the same number of clicks that come in. But their case value might be really high, right? And so it's why, again, and he said it exactly right, I've got to know what my value of a student is. And for many years, I had to separate it out of what the value of the student was, the enrollment percentage, the renewal percentage, the value of a student who came in from an infomercial lead versus a newspaper lead versus a direct mail lead versus a community outreach type of activity. And by the way, you know, within those numbers, typically it was the newspaper didn't produce as many leads, but they converted better and they were more valuable. The infomercial produced a ton of leads, but generally they were less valuable, right? So once you tracked it all the way through the system, you can see what the value is from that source. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can I suggest before you start on that topic, we take a quick break because we're at two hours and 45 minutes. And the camera's going to run out, so I think...
Let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah, let's take a 5 or 7 minute break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Know everybody's name?
It's a great area, and I want to know there because of the high demographic. And because, you know, I got this room, you know, our real estate was really there. It's like $25. But I found some $15. Already a martial artist. Already awesome. Exactly. And I actually tracked down the guy that was in and they are giving me 4 months free rent. And they're giving me an extra month and a half. And my dad is giving me my admission. Yeah, so it's going to be 5.5 total. They were really desperate to get that place. I was going to sign the lease before I came, but they didn't send me a date piece of time. So
I have no idea.
Did he ever go anywhere with that?
Yeah.
Pizzo and Matt Fury both were doing huge numbers.
At Pizzo, I don't know. We were working with him, and then one day he just kind of like had a meltdown with all the people that I knew he was working with, and haven't heard from him again.
Was it all online stuff, or did he had physical schools? Or?
No, it wasn't physical schools.
Just all online.
Yeah. But, you know, he was doing the Lieutenant X thing and then Captain Chris, and I knew the numbers at one time. He had such a big email list that he was regularly breaking on Fusionsoft. They started having divided up into separate accounts, so if he did an email blast, it would be like, I'm talking like, two or three million names. You know, and Matt Fury, the way I heard it described to me, is basically he, in a pretty short period of time, he made so much damn money that he really kind of semi-retired, and he's trying to, you know, help his kid become a pro baseball player, and really isn't doing much, but he just hit it out of the ballpark so hard, so fast. And Pizzo was doing huge numbers as well. And there's definite, now, you know, in both cases, I mean, nobody ever learned anything about martial arts from buying any of their stuff, right? I mean, most of them, they were, you know, open to shrink wrap. You know, they just found that there's a huge niche for guys who, you know, wanted to be, you know, hardcore. My perception is with Pizzo, because he was doing a bunch of stuff with, he wrote the book Guerrilla Marketing, and what's his name? A marketing consulting guy. But he got convinced to go from like the hardcore Lieutenant X thing to like the kinder, gentler, appeal to everybody, Captain Griff. And I think that kind of torpedoed his results. Is as soon as you're trying to be palatable for everybody, then, you know, then waters it down. But I really don't know what he's doing. I'm on all his lists, and, you know, recently I got an email that he resurfaced for a month or two and was selling some stuff, and then he's gone again, so I don't know.
Master Oliver, are you talking about the scouts? Now they have very badges that are kind of involved in some of the things that
he... Oh, absolutely. Well, the Girl Scouts have a self-defense merit badge.
Yeah, because the Boy Scouts don't.
They have other stuff, films that, yeah, like self-improvement things.
Oh, absolutely.
Stuff like that. They roll their stuff to it.
Yeah. Okay, everybody ready to get going?
Yep.
Okay, so our mission here is... So I think this one's still running, Greg.
It's red.
Yeah, it's red.
We're on over here.
We figured out that a 32 gig chip on this has 48 hours recording time, and a 64 gig chip there was 5 hours. So that gives you a different a ratio for the how much video takes in space versus audio. And I think that's recorded in 1080p, believe it or not. It's cheap ass camera. I picked those up at Best Buy. I bought two or three of them at the same time because the Canon camera that they were doing a closeout for like $300. But the unique thing about that one is they have an external mic jack, so you can now. Usually we run it with the lavaliers, so usually we run the lavaliers and run the audio because the problem with the cheap video cameras is the audio sucks, right? And the next step up.